demons are coming. Hide your children.
And now, a word from our peons.
1, 2, 3, click.
I was listening to what it took to get the DVD sync to watch the first movie, and I'm like, these people can't organize anything. And then we just had the same issue, so I can't talk.
Yeah.
And we should tell them who we are.
Okay, that makes sense.
Because otherwise they'll be going, who are you?
That's right. I'm just assuming because I know who I am.
And
I know
who
you are.
I don't think you're a peon anymore.
I'm the head cheese. No.
Well, I finished updating the stupid library.
You're the librarian.
No, wait a minute. I'm feeling very small because you're an MLE and PS is the librarian and she's an MLE.
Yeah.
And I can edit within Peoncast. I'm Gen 2. Somehow.
Oh, what is that? We have to do that again.
Hello, I'm Gen 2.
Who's going next, me?
You went next the last time.
I know, and then I just got stage fright.
Then I'll go next.
I'll go last. Jen, you have to say it again.
I'm Jen 2.
I'm PS.
And I'm Keza.
And we're Peon Cast. That's how serious we take this.
Incidentally, speaking of serious.
We take this seriously and we're doing a fic about serious.
We are.
We are. What's it called?
It's called 17 Minutes Till Midnight in Casablanca by Laura Laurent. First off, we should warn people this is rated R for language and some adult situations. There's some alcohol. If you're a teenager and you're going to read this fic and you shouldn't be reading about these things, then I suggest you not read the story.
That's good advice. Yeah, I never saw Sirius as an important character until well after. And I think I've more explored Sirius through fan fiction than the actual book. They don't give you a lot in canon. Jen, give a... What's the word I'm looking for?
A synopsis.
Synopsis is a good word.
Synopsis. Synopsis. This would be Christmas before Sirius dies. He is
New Year's Eve.
I'm sorry. Well, I guess I got confused because he talks about Christmas at the beginning. New Year's Eve before Sirius dies. He is sitting in his kitchen drinking and waxing philosophical about his life. And he has a very intriguing conversation with Jenny. They see each other for who they really are, I think.
I really liked it because I'd never read a story that had interaction between Sirius and Jenny before. And so I thought it was really interesting because I think the two of them would really get along and have compatible personalities. So I'm surprised that I hadn't read a story about
that. Yeah, that was the first thing that I got from it too when I read it, because I read it last year sometime. It was the first one that I read where Ginny and Sirius were talking.
Well, and another thing that I thought was very interesting was the correlation that the author brought between Sirius and his time in Azkaban and how that affected him emotionally and what Ginny went through in the chamber and the year that she was possessed.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that, you know, they understand each other a lot while they're sitting there.
I was thinking how it also explains why Ginny is like more mature than for her years while he's less mature, so they actually meet, because later on in the fic they connect, and that's why, because their experiences
mm-hmm.
have brought them to the same level even though they're such different ages.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought about it that way before, so that's kind of an interesting perspective.
And I like the whole section of how he struggles with himself about whether he
should think she's pretty.
Yeah, whether he's
yeah
got a pedophilia problem, why Harry hasn't noticed her. And
do you think he's thinking he would notice her if he was Harry?
Yeah, I think he does.
Yeah.
I think he just can't figure out why
Harry hasn't noticed her.
Right.
But he thinks Harry will notice her. That's something I've always wondered, because in a lot of fics that explore Sirius, they talk about that Harry will notice Ginny and all that sort of stuff. And I always wonder, does that come from canon or is that just a fanfic thing that's...
I don't think it comes from canon, if only because the fact that Harry and Ginny would be romantically involved caught me completely off guard in Half-Blood Prince, so.
Because one of the things that actually quite annoys me, and I don't know, maybe it's canon, that whole line about Potters and Redheads, and I'm like, does that come from canon, or is that just something that's grown out of fan fiction?
Definitely grown out of fan fiction.
Yeah, I think somebody just noticed one day, hey, James and Lily were, and ooh, Harry and Ginny.
Near the end, when she kisses him, he says, all I can think is that Harry's a goner. But this fic doesn't say that he's going to be a goner because Ginny looks like Lily and Potters and Redheads and all that. So I like that he's saying Harry's going to be a goner on Ginny's own merits because she is the person that she is, that anyone would find her attractive in that, not just because she's a redhead and it's like fated in the stars and all that sort of stuff. It gives Ginny more, whatever. character depth.
Because I think that's the reason why I don't like the ship, is because it seems like Ginny really has no character beyond being the love interest.
Yeah, but this fit gives her some character.
Right. So that's why I liked it, when I don't normally like this ship.
Because too many people fall into that thing where they're meant to be together and it's because, you know, she looks like his mum and all that. And it just devalues Ginny as a character.
It devalues her as a person.
And so I like the fix like this that explore her and give her a character, because a lot of people manage to not give her any depth.
Well, see, even he says, like, I found it right here. It says, I'd rather like to wring his neck right now for putting that look on her face. I don't know, but I've got this feeling, call it a hunch, but something tells me this gorgeous baby in red sitting next to me could wind up saving that kid somehow. And if he doesn't hurry up and pull his self-absorbed head out of his arse. And then he says, just a little bit later, he says, oh, but this time she's really smiling, and how I wish she'd do that more often. It's enough to make a wretch like me curl my hair and do a jig.
Yeah, and that gives her value as a person and as a character of herself.
Right.
And not just as, you know, a trophy for Harry to win at the end of it all.
Well, and another thing that I liked about the Ginny character in this is that she has enough chutzpah to sit down there with Sirius and ask him for a drink.
I like that, too. Like, I really liked her.
Well, and then he explains to her that it's midnight in Casablanca. And then she totally gets where he's at and then gives him, you know, the New Year's kiss, which is so mature. I just realized why I like this story so much. It's a glimpse at Sirius that you don't get.
In the book, you see, like, how he is around Harry and how he's almost seeing Harry as James. So it's really more of a young-seeming Sirius because he's having fun with Harry.
I think it fits in with that Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And he was all cheerful and singing because Harry was around and they were having a family Christmas. And
creepy premonition aside, New Year's in Casablanca is better and sweeter than Christmas in heaven.
Yeah, I never really liked Sirius till after he died. I wasn't interested in him until he was dead.
I remember when Order of the Phoenix came out. All these people that I knew on the web, like, were in floods of tears because he died. And I didn't know who it was and I didn't particularly care at the time. And so then I got to it and I read the book and I'm sitting there going, huh, why did they all care so much that Sirius died? Because I'd read them all in a week and I hadn't been investing years into thinking about it and rereading it and stuff.
I know what you mean, because I've had other experiences like that where I've read the whole series really close together, so I wasn't sad when deaths happened. This may sound kind of crazy, but I think shipping Remus Sirius has made me care about each of them individually. After I started shipping it, then I became more interested in each of them.
I don't think that I found Sirius as an important character or anyone sort of meaningful until probably Deathly Hallows, actually. Then he took on a whole new meaning, because it's then I started to realize that Harry had missed all his father figures. I know I'm slow. It took me that long to get it. But that's when I started really thinking, well, you know, Sirius died and left him, and Dad already left him, and his Uncle Vernon wasn't a good dad. And I think it was actually after Deathly Hallows, and I was thinking about Harry's bad luck with father figures. And that's when Sirius took on more meaning for me.
And then that whole crazy scene in the Department of Mysteries, and when that happened, oh, that was horrible for me, that whole ripping scene of, I felt that.
That's the thing, that's what I'm saying. When I reread, and especially in Deathly Hallows, I kind of go, oh, Sirius, and I get sad.
But on the other hand, it wasn't just Harry, it was for Sirius too, because for him it was like another chance.
Yeah, and he never really got it, did he?
No.
And I think this one shot here, when he's talking about that premonition and everything, you sort of get that eerie sense that he knows he's not going to actually get that chance.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because he's got that premonition.
Yeah, well, and he even says it up in the middle of the story. If he doesn't hurry up and pull himself together, she could save him somehow. And it's like he feels like he doesn't even, you know, he knows he's not going to find out what happens in the end.
It's a sense of despair in this fic, I think, with Sirius. Because he thinks about his past and how much he missed out with his family. And then he sort of has this premonition that he's going to miss it all with Harry as well. He sort of hands it over to Ginny at that point. And so as happy as he is at that time to have Harry around and everything, I think he's come to the conclusion that he's going to miss it. And that gives another depth to why he went to the Department of Mysteries.
Yeah.
Because he had nothing left to lose. He was going to go down fighting because he didn't feel like he was going to come out the end of it anyway.
Right.
Like he sort of might have given
up. He knows he's in a situation that he can't get out of.
Well, and I think he felt like he passed the torch a little bit.
Yeah, passed the torch and then just went for it, did what he had to. I think that fan fiction gives us a lot more about Sirius and ways of looking at his character, because you get so little, you know, you don't get his motivations in canon. Because from Harry's point of view, Sirius just does everything for Harry, but you don't get what leads Sirius to make the decisions that he makes about things.
I guess now that I'm a parent, I understand Sirius a little more.
Yeah? How?
I don't know. I guess maybe it's being a little older, wanting to protect somebody and feeling like you're obligated. I view him differently now as a parent than I did before.
Yeah, I didn't read them before I was a parent, so I don't have a contrast.
I did, but I'm not a parent yet.
Jen, you are the only one who understands the concept.
Check back in a few years, and maybe I'll get what you're talking about.
Well, before he was just, you know, somebody that came along to take care of Harry, and now he's somebody that had a deep sense of obligation to his best friends to take care of him, and then he didn't fulfill it.
I think he did, in a way. Well, he didn't fulfill the obligation to take care of him as a child, but it's that stepping in front of a bus moment.
Yeah, but
he did that.
He had a lot of,
you know, he did the big stuff.
He had a lot of guilt about it. I think he carried a lot of guilt about it.
Maybe we should say what fic we're doing next week so maybe people can read it.
Ooh, that's a good idea. What are we doing next week?
It's the DA Drabble series. We'll put a link. If you're listening to this episode, there should be a link on the forum.
Read it or be square.
Or you won't know what we're talking about.
No, you have no idea.
This is Jen 2.
P.S.
Keza. Losing it.
And this has been Peoncast.
Play the music. Good night.
Good night. So long. Farewell. Auf Wiedersehen. Good night. Goodbye.
That was on the podcast of Doom.
Goodbye.
And now a word from our peons.
When you want to kill a kangaroo, you actually have to shoot it.
What's the point of a boomerang?
Hang on. I'm not Aboriginal. I don't know how to throw.
Throw them around the world so they can
you
come back.
Call yourself Australian. I could kill a grizzly bear with a boomerang.
Could not.
I could too.
Mike, you're full of crap.
I'm gifted to do that.
No.
Two grizzly bears at once.
No. Uh-huh. No.
By boomerang, do you mean huge freaking shotgun?
Hi, I'm Keza.
Mike.
Richard.
Jen 2.
And I'm Tina.
And we're Peoncast. And this week, we are doing a fic, Listen to Your Heart, by... How do you say that? Oh, it's Rider of Life 037.
Yay!
Yay!
So, Richard, Okay. Tell us why you like the fic.
Okay. The reason I like this fic, and there's reasons I don't like it too, but I'll start with the good ones first. In essence, it is a harmony fic, and... Everybody knows that I have a sort of a Jones for Harmony Fix. That's what got me started on it. That's why I actually kept reading. It's angsty, a lot, actually. Some of it is a little bit overplayed. I wish I had a clear-cut reason to say why. It's just something that I've always really enjoyed. And the song is good, too. But
yeah, I like the song. That's a cool song.
Well, I got to be honest here, guys. I'm normally positive about most fix, but this one, I have to say, it really bugged me that there was, like, 20,000 typos. She'd be like, she and Luna used to be good friends. She was supposed to be the maid of honor. Then it's, Jin, I know something is wrong. You're a little sister to me, and I've been able to tell when anything is wrong. Now what is it? or this was supposed, again, with no D, to be the happiest day of this life. Instead of
now, Mike, does that totally ruin a fic for you?
And I can get there being like one or two in a story, but when I go down, like, you know, no one's perfect. Everything slipped through. But if I go down and I see like 12 of these in a one shot, then it starts to take something away because you can't get into the flow of it because every time you start reading, suddenly you have to stop to figure out what she's trying to say in the sentence. You know what I mean?
I do.
Thanks for tearing apart my fic, Mike.
I'm feeling she-ish. I'm channeling my inner she.
I mean, they bother me, but I just read past them.
Sometimes I can do that, and sometimes I can't. It depends.
Well, it depends on how bad they are.
Exactly.
And it depends if I'm invested in the rest of it as well. If I'm not enjoying the story very much, I'll notice them more.
I could say the same.
See, there's another point I wanted to make as well. Now, I don't know. I guess this is getting a little too a little bit of sketchy territory, talking about like suicide and stuff, because that's what this fic ultimately ends in.
Oh, you've just ruined the ending.
Thank you.
Sorry, go on.
So the ending, Jenny jumps off a cliff. Okay. There you go.
Which is why I cannot like this at all. Made me read a fic where Jenny jumped off a cliff.
Well, that's just how our Harmonians are fighting back. This is what I have to do. I'm sorry. But, no, I'm kidding. But, see...
After everything I've done for you, Richard, and you made me read a fic where Jenny jumped off of
it. I don't find it that realistic that she would jump off a cliff.
See, I was...
I think she fights more than that. You know, she fights...
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. Like, to me, you know, she loves him so much. She loves her family so much. She loves all this stuff so much. Then why are you going to take the selfish choice to go and do something like this? I mean, granted, every time that something like this happens, whether it's an attempt or someone actually does it, it's not, you know, the reasons can vary, but this particular reason was supremely selfish, and if you really love somebody that much, even if they are with somebody else, I don't think you would do that.
Throw yourself
on their wedding day, no less.
She's very spiteful about it, too.
I mean, it's not the nice thing to say, because she killed herself, but I couldn't help feeling a little sorry for Harry and all that, personally.
Yeah.
I mean, it's supposed to, you get married, it's supposed to be, like, the best day of your life, and she's wrecked it.
And,
yeah, so she didn't do that, and...
Well, I mean, and Hermione's her best friend, and Hermione didn't even know, and then all of a sudden she goes and flings herself off a cliff and ruins the wedding, and just very like
very mean.
It was very spiteful, and I was very disappointed in Jenny.
Maybe it is some type of not-so-subtle way of, like Richard said, I mean, he was kind of joking, but maybe it is some, you know, the Harmonians have kind of taken their grief, and maybe the author felt that that was, you know, was a... Oh, wait up.
I don't like any of the Weasley except Charlie. I love Charlie. For one, he's not gay, but he just loves his dragons more. So that just kind of, yeah, that's kind of interesting. And Bill, Bill's just awesome. He's got the hottest chick alive. But everybody else is just Ron, Ginny, Fred and George maybe, but Ron and Ginny are just, they're so boring.
Let's not go there.
I'm not saying anything.
But they're his best friends. No, seriously. That when you know, no matter who you ship or whatever, Ron is his best friend. How do you write a fic that doesn't include his best friend unless you kill them all?
Oh, don't ask him that, Kessa. Well, you're not going to let him, sir.
I do think actually very
is.
Harmonians are just wrong.
The majority of us are
incest.
It is.
Like
it's
Richard,
not right.
You know that it's Terry Ginny, that's what the canon is. You still like the idea that somewhere down the road, Harry and Hermione would get together. And that's fine.
It's really what it is. It's Richard likes Emma Watson.
Actually, you know I do. Her birthday is 18 very soon.
He's going to start stalking her.
It has nothing to do with Hermione and everything to do with Emma Watson.
So speaking of Hermione... You know what I find really odd? It's in this fic, so I guess it brings us slightly back on topic. Are those fics where they have Hermione as best friends with Ginny? Because, like, it seems, this is my impression coming away from the canon, that not that they're not friendly, and they probably even consider each other friends, but it doesn't seem like they interact a ton outside of the holidays. And it seems to me that the people Ginny would be closest friends with would be the people in her own year who are her own roommates.
I never saw Ginny and Hermione as best friends.
Yeah.
I saw them as
friendly, yeah, and hanging out, but I never saw them as best friends. I always saw Luna as Ginny's best friend.
Yeah, like, if it wasn't for
Ginny being Ron's sister and Ron being, you know, Harry's best friend, I don't think that Hermione and Ginny would ever have been friends.
I agree.
They hang out together. It's a friendship of mutuality. And now that they're all one big Happy Wheeze family, I'm sure that they are family and they get along. A lot of fics have them being BFF.
They're two very different people.
Exactly. Especially after Ginny's little snark fest on her and Half-Blood Prince. Don't, you know, start talking about Quidditch. You don't know what you're talking about. I forget the exact line, but, you know, that kind of...
You guys have to put it in context, though. Okay, let's say 5 years after Hogwarts, they're all, Ron and Hermione and Harry and Ginny, everybody's all married up, and Ron and Harry are, of course, best friends, and I think, like, after everything is over as far as school and after the Voldemort thing is over, they're going to become closer just naturally.
Yeah.
So, I agree.
And that's kind of what I said. I just don't think at Hogwarts that they were these great friends. You know, talking girl talk up in the dorm rooms on a Friday night. You know what I mean?
No, Hermione had other priorities.
Yeah, and not to say they weren't friendly and that they didn't hang out or whatever.
But Ginny was sporty and social.
But how many
things
have you guys read?
Popular. Tons.
Yeah, there's so many.
They're always best friends.
But to be fair, this fic is after Hogwarts, and, you know, you have to sort of put everything into context, like I was in T9 as well, she said, too. But.
Oh, yeah, I think they'll become friends, yeah. I just don't think they started off as friends.
And like we said, if they've spent, you know, so many holidays together and summers, you know, they're going to be friendly. They're going to have a friendship. I just don't think that it really existed at Hogwarts. I think that it might have existed on holidays and summer times.
Exactly.
But I think it's one of those things that, you know, you go away for the summer and there's a kid that you always played with when you were a child, but you never really talked to him outside of school. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, they were cool when you were there, but when you went back to school, it was,
And this fic, how close could they be that Hermione doesn't recognize that Ginny's this depressed?
Exactly. I was going to say that, Mike. That good friends, and Harry, too. I mean, he's a little obtuse, but if she is that desperately in love with him and they can't see that she's about to throw herself off a cliff, then they really didn't know her that well.
I have a question, too, about that. I mean, I hate to say, I'm not trying to be negative about the fic, but, I mean, if we're all superpower wizards here, somebody's jumping over the side of the cliff, can't you do something to catch her or something? I mean...
Well, doesn't he try?
He just yells, hey,
he tries to. He tries to. He screamed.
He just said, Ginny,
stop. I suppose he didn't get out his wand.
He could have done a slowing thing like Dumbledore did when Harry fell off his bike or something.
And he climbs down to her. I'm thinking, why didn't he just levitate her back up?
Yeah, that's awfully dangerous to go down that cliff. He could fall and hurt himself.
He should have grabbed a broom. It's not very wizardy.
So, yeah, let's be honest. Like, I know P.S. doesn't like Ginny and Harry together, and I don't mind them together, but you have to admit in canon, that's not a healthy relationship, what they have going. I mean, you know, they don't really talk. She's like a trophy bride in that.
No, you just don't see it.
You don't see it.
Harry's our point of view and we don't see it.
Well, how many...
He's happier than
how many times do you go through and read something and it's Thanksgiving and the next thing it's Christmas? I mean, she doesn't tell you what they did every day between
the
common room.
She doesn't, but we get a good sense of Harry's relationship with Hermione, and Harry's relationship with Ron.
That's because they've had 6 years to build on it.
Right, but I'm not saying, you know,
whatever
the reason is. You're
saying that they don't have a good relationship because they got together...
No. What I'm saying is, we reading that book, me, I don't get the sense that he really knows her or who she is, or that this is true love in the canon that's destined, you know, for marriage, like the basis of a solid lifelong relationship versus kind of teenage make out in the broom closet kind of relationship.
No, see, I feel completely the opposite.
I do too.
Same.
Cho was the making out in the broom closet for fun type of crush.
Yeah, well, he didn't do that. He didn't make it out.
Well,
Cho never made him feel the way Ginny makes him feel.
We're told that. I mean, obviously that's the case because he winds up marrying her, and he says that. But my point is, I don't feel. From reading canon, I don't, other than him just saying that, I don't come away with that impression. Whereas I consider him and Ron as friends, not because he says Ron's my best friend, but because reading the interaction, that, you know, does that make sense what I'm saying?
I get what you're saying.
It does. It does. Yeah. And here's the thing. That's the people who shipped Harry and Ginny knew it was Harry and Ginny back in Goblet of Fire because they picked up on all the little things.
I knew from book one it was going to wind up Harry and Ginny. From the train scene, you know it.
Well, in hindsight, you can say. But see, then now you're saying that it. You didn't. there wasn't anything to build up to that point.
I'm talking from the author's standpoint, like how she writes the books. I can see plot-wise this is coming. But what I don't see is, like, intellectually, I know it's coming. And intellectually, I know, okay, they're going to be soulmates. They're going to be living together. But on an emotional sense, their bond to me doesn't seem as strong or as real or as fleshed out as does, say, his friendship with Ron, or even Ron and Hermione's relationship, or even how even Snape and Lily's relationship. Intellectually, I know, oh, this is how it's going, this is how it's meant to work. Does that make sense, what I'm saying at all?
I get it.
I get it, but I don't, I mean, I don't agree
with you. I don't agree either, but we'll leave it at that for tonight.
We can agree to disagree.
Exactly.
I think that Joe puts a lot of things between the lines in these books, and that yeah. if you don't look for them or you don't see them when you read it the first or the second time, you don't realize that they're even there.
I have to admit something to you about what you just said. It took me 12 times to read through 1 through 5 to realize that Harry and Hermione weren't happening. So I can go, you know, I can go with that. But I see Mike's point as well about how it's not, there's not a much in-your-face evidence about what's going on. I mean, of course, like you said, you know pretty much from the beginning what's going to end up happening. It's just not, there's no detail on, like, their actual relationship. You just know that's how it's going to be.
Yeah, but it's also a statement of Harry's character, too. Harry's a very closed kind of person. You know, you get the part from Hermione's perspective. You get it from Ron's perspective. You get it from their friendship from Harry's perspective. But Harry falling in love with Jenny, you get that part from Jenny's perspective. But Harry's still a very private person, yeah. So he's not just going to come out.
So that was our fic for this week and our discussion on Harmony and what it means to the fandom. And next week we're going to do another fic. We don't know what it is yet either, so we'll all get a surprise. So I'm Keza.
I'm Mike.
I'm Richard.
I'm Jen too.
And I'm Tina.
And we're Peoncast.
Bye.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Scene one, Apple, take one.
I was going to say, am I the only one, every time I see Tina's name, I think of Lennon?
Yes.
What? Yeah.
I do, because I see Christine St. Peter, and I think St. Petersburg, and then I think Leningrad, and then I think Lennon.
Well, I see the fic, and I think of doing the actual podcast.
Yay!
Yeah, sorry.
Before Richard cries.
That's right. Give me the title, so I open the right one.
Sorry. 10 Surefire Ways to Cure the Common Cold.
Mmm. I like that one.
That was hilarious. Big ups to the author. Who wrote that, by the way?
Why, our own Jen 2.
Yay!
Yay!
I'm clapping right now. I'm trying not to do it loudly.
Yeah.
She says she's blushing, but she's really got a huge, smug smile on right now. So that's what I thought.
No, really, I am. I'm blushing.
The peons are coming. Hide your children.
I will make you understand.
I'm Richard.
I'm Jen 2.
I'm Keza.
I'm Tina.
Mike.
And we are the peons.
We're staging a revolution.
I'll takeover of a before, so. Oh, yes.
Can we're somebody, pathetic.
What? Did somebody put in the title, please?
Which weekly 10 surefire ways to cure the common cold?
Thank you, Keza.
You're welcome.
As she so brilliantly and eloquently stated, we are covering what she just said, because I forgot it already. I did
which
not forget
weekly
the
fic 10 surefire ways to cure the common cold?
Thank you. I remember this fic, the title, as Witch Weekly, and I remember it as being hilarious. And it is, of course, by going back to square one, who is also with us today, our dear Jen 2.
Two.
She bows. She curtsies.
And we bow to you.
Thank you.
How do the queens wave, but in a more manly... But anyway.
A manly queens wave?
Yeah.
So, can I ask a general question? Two a question since we have her here?
Sure. Certainly.
Well, one thing I didn't get when I read it, and Richard said I should have, so I was hoping you guys could explain it to me, was the ending. Because I read the ending, and in all honesty, I didn't think it ended there. Like, I started refreshing it so the rest would appear. So,
my
and Richard told me, like, no, it's supposed to end there. There's a whole
and the
joke
tradition continues.
I was like, where's part two?
You're kidding.
It makes sense to me.
Mike, are you kidding? It's the punchline.
Yeah.
Is that punchline?
I mean, can you explain? I know, Richard told me it's the punchline. Could you explain it to me?
Oh, okay. Like Ryan said, when we did Naked Quidditch, I feel like I'm in the room when Mike is going through puberty. And I'm now explaining the facts of life to Mike.
Do I need to explain this as the author, or do you want to do this, Tina?
Oh, it's just too fun. I want to do this. Okay. Do you remember when Ginny was reading the article about the 10 surefire ways to cure the common cold, Mike?
Right, yeah, at the beginning.
Okay.
She was reading, like, there was all these different things.
Do you do you remember what number 10 was?
Let me go back and see.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that one, yes. So what's the punchline?
He said skip straight to number 10.
Okay, wait a minute, Mike. Okay. She laughed out loud when she saw the article. It listed the obvious homeopathic remedies, vitamins, foods, and aromatherapies, but tucked right into number 10 was a cure she'd never seen before. Sex.
I get the joke that it's sex. I thought it was funny. I laughed. I don't get what that has to do with the end, though.
Because Ron is saying, skip right past 1 through 9.
Just go for number 10.
Number 10. The rest won't be necessary.
Then how do you fix the problem?
Dum dum. Number 10. Ah! Come on.
I thought the whole point was Ron had a cold, and then Harry's telling him how to fix it.
Because yeah. They go to number 10. He's
just skip 1 through 9 and go right to number 10, because...
But aren't you supposed to wait? Is that like the I'm better sex kind of?
No! It's the killer!
Okay, well, I didn't get that, I guess.
Oh.
Why am I always so stupid on these?
Come on, let me ask you. You get all the tiny little nuances there is in A Song of Ice and Fire, but this little thing right here, this big, I don't see, you're a unique individual. I'm glad to have you here.
I'm almost scared.
My favorite part, let me just go ahead and go forward. It's almost the same part that Mike was talking about. I don't know if he's referring to what Ron said when he burst in, but when Ron bursts in, he says, I don't know where you are, but I hope you're naked and ready, basically. And Hermione just looks at Ginny and she's like, oh, that was priceless. I think the neighbors heard me laughing.
You also love when Ginny's in the store and she's talking like, well, you know, can't ever tell my mom that I go in here. And then I hear what the salesperson says exactly, but she's like,
there's other red-haired women that come in here, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, how embarrassing is that to find out you're in the same store as your mother?
Now, can you picture Molly and Arthur in one of these really strange situations?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I have seven kids. Yeah. Are you kidding me?
I picture, like...
Even before Half-Blood Prince, Ginny is just one of my favorite characters, and I love it when she's portrayed as a strong, confident woman who is Harry's equal. And I got that from this. I really love that. And every wife out there can sympathize with her when Harry comes home. I'm sick.
I am sicker than you. I am sicker than you will be in your life.
Because I'm going to tell you right where this story came from.
I didn't ask that. Where did it come from?
My husband was really, really sick. E-baby had been a terror. She wasn't sick, but she was just being a terror. She was very little at the time. Well, not very little, but she was... And I came to bed one night, and he was just... it was phlegm, and... it was just terrible. And I felt bad for him, but there he was. In bed. And I thought, this is just horrible. And then I'm like, ugh. And so I just, the whole time, I thought, you know, there's a story in this. You know, and I just, you know, you baby him, and he just doesn't get any better. And I just, you know, I thought, well, I mothered my child today, and now I'm mothering my husband. And... You know, you prop him up on pillows and give him a Kleenex and la-di-da-di-da-di-da. you know, and that's where it came from. Pretty much everything in this story is my marriage.
Okay, so do we have anything else about this lovely fic, lady?
I have some objections I'd like to ask Jen, if that's okay.
Sure. No, it's not. No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
I was just curious, I guess, you as this professional super writer, what do you find being, I guess, the hardest part when you write a fic like this to do?
Come up with another one?
No, that's like true, because people are always going, we want more, we want more, and you have to think it up.
When did you write this? I mean, before book 7 or after book 7?
After.
After?
I didn't write my very first story until after book 7.
Oh, really? Wow. You've become very good very fast, then.
I would agree with Mike on that one.
Say thank you.
Thank you. I've been writing for a while. Maybe not fanfic, but I've been writing for a while.
Well, because you know what I mean? Usually like, you see people's first fanfics, and they're all kind of... Well, you know what I mean.
Technically, this was my second fanfic. My first one was Continuum. And, well, this was one Sunday afternoon. I was writing Continuum, and I'm like, I can't do this. I need something else. And so I just shut it down and wrote this one instead. And then I went back and, you know, pounded out the next chapter of Continuum, which was all angsty and horrible. Actually, I think the next chapter that I wrote after this was probably the best one that I wrote of that one. So,
you know, that's why I love stories like this, because, you know, you could be reading something that's, you know, a novel length that, you know, you're really getting into, but sometimes you just need to take a little break. But, you know, this is like just comfort food. You get away for a little while.
It was almost like that to write it, too.
It seems like it.
Do we have anything else on this one, anybody?
I loved it, Jen.
Thank you, too.
Me, too, and I would look forward to seeing more in the series when you get around to it.
Yes, even if I didn't get the end.
Oh, for sure.
Don't cobbler, just get to writing. That's what I want.
Hopefully it's
so wait, Chris, so did Ginny not do 1 through 9 either, or is Harry just...
I think she did.
That's what I thought, but then he's saying just tell her to skip the 10.
Because
Harry's a guy and he only cares about number 10.
Number 10 if you didn't have 1 through 9 first.
She made him the
student.
I'm feeling the only one not getting.
Have you had the talk yet, Mike? Do you know what goes on in number 10?
Yeah, I get what goes on. I just don't get why you're skipping 1 through 9, because then how can you perform in 10 if you're still sick because you don't have 1 through 9?
Are you sure you're married?
You're a guy. It's irrelevant.
Not to get too graphic, but guys can be almost on their deathbed and still...
I think we had this conversation on a certain thread.
Yeah.
And that's what I was told.
Yeah.
True.
Have you ever seen that episode of Friends?
Yes.
Where who is Monica and Chandler. And one of them is Chandler sick.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going, no. And he's trying to seduce Monica. And she's like, but you're sick. Don't you want to rest? Don't you want to, you know, get better? And then he gives her the cold and she comes out. And she tried to seduce him, and he's like, ew, go away, you've got germs.
I get that.
I love that episode as well. I love that episode of Friends.
Mike, look at it this way. 1 through 9 don't actually do anything. It's actually 10, the only thing that works. Why not just try it? Hey, there's 10 ways. We're going to do the 10th one anyway.
Have you ever heard the concept of eating dessert first?
Yes.
It's like that.
Okay. Eat dessert first.
Cut to the chase.
And if dessert makes you full, then you're all the better for it. Then you don't have to eat the rest of the meal.
Okay.
I can't believe you don't get this. I can't believe how many hundreds of reviews I've gotten off of the story off of various sites, and not one person has ever said, I don't get it.
Why don't they do
it? You know what I want to do? I want to get all these stories with punchlines and get Mike to read them and then see if he gets it.
No, that would be kind of...
Poor Mike.
I always miss... I get the really subtle stuff, just not the...
The jackhammer stuff?
Yeah. I think I get it. I feel stupid that I was refreshing it, trying to see more.
Okay,
this has been... Eon Cass. I just said that American because you people have influenced my voice.
Boom, boom,
boom. Peon cast.
What do you mean, you people? What is that?
You people. It was people. You American people. Butter.
Shh. Butter. This...
butter.
I should butter. Come down south and hear people say butter.
Butter. Butter. I was watching butter. Dukes of Hazzard the other night.
What? How's your mutter doing?
Your mutter.
Mutter?
It's a late day in New York City.
I like the New York swears. Like, I know we can't really say them, but some of them are just really funny.
The what? The New York what?
The swear words.
Salon.
Swear words. Swears. What's a swear?
Don't make fun of my accent. Come on.
I'm not. That's how it sounds to me. It's like, what is that?
Help
some
it.
Kind of I'm... bagel. No?
Do you have right. bagels in Australia?
Yes.
Well, they don't have them in Texas, so what the... I don't know.
I'm sure they have bagels in Texas.
They do, too.
We're going to do another one.
This thing is entirely depressing right now, let me just say. And now we've wrapped up Witch Weekly's 10 Surefire Ways to Hear the Common Cold by going back to square one, our own Gen 2. And we will be back next week with something.
We're not sure what.
Yes. So, until next time, this is Richard.
I'm Gen 2.
I'm Keza.
I'm Tina.
Mike.
And we'll see you next week.
Bye.
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 Bye. Bye, y'all. Come back next week.
Scene one, Apple, take one.
And now, a word from our peons.
I just realized something.
What?
When I host this, I can see my own name.
Well, that's what happens when you host an episode. It's like you have your big boy pants on today.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Peoncast. I'm P.S.
Mike.
Gen 2.
I'm Keza.
And tonight, our fic is the Dumbledore's Army Drabble series by Canby. And there will be a link on the forums if you want to read it.
I thought I was going to pee my pants at about 2:30 this morning. Literally.
The skybug I heard from her this morning was pretty funny. Oh, I'm not going to say it word for word, but last night has to be recorded. Why? Diatribe about how bad it was. The end. Like, wow, maybe we should redo it. And I'll participate this time, and it'll just be that much more fun because I'm.
I was afraid it had like deleted itself.
I was sitting there saying, "But how bad can it be? Like, I'm sure it can't be that bad." And then I actually listened to it and went, "Oh, that's bad. That's really
well,
bad."
I knew that it was bad because I sent it to Joe's server this morning. And, you know, Joe's really good, so I thought, you know, surely if there's anything that's salvageable about it, you know, he'll say, oh, Jen, we can save this. And
did he say it was awful?
You know,
what did he say instead?
He's like, oh, this is really
that's what he said.
You know, I was praying that when I got a chance to give it to Joe, that he would wave some wand over it and make it right. And then the first thing he did was just ruin my whole damn day. You know, then explain to Mike that the file was trash.
And were you nice to him, or did you be like, you can't ever record it?
No, I was very yes. nice.
Well, see, Mike and I have a strange relationship, so I would have taken the opportunity to just lay into him because it's fun.
Poor old.
You're nicer
Mike.
Than me.
Well, he already thinks I'm a conservative, so. I'm not pushing my luck. All right, so I'm feeling a bit of deja vu.
I'm feeling
not me.
Intense deja vu.
I wasn't here last time, so this is a first for me, so I get to enjoy it for the first time. So yay!
Yay!
And since we're missing Mike, there were some. He told me to bring up some things, so.
Oh, Christ. Wait, did I say that out loud?
Yeah, you did.
Damn it. I'm always
Play
doing
that.
That.
Out.
You did say it, unfortunately.
I heard some about, some things about some of his unique rants from yesterday. I'm just curious if he has conscripted PS to bring those same rants into our discussion today.
He told me to bring it up. I didn't say I would rant.
I didn't want to. He made me. Nah, it's cool. I got it.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Peoncast. This is PS.
I'm Jen 2.
I'm Keza.
And I'm Richard.
And tonight we are doing the Dumbledore's Army Drabble series by Cambie. It's a post-DH fic, and it's a series of drabbles focusing on the various members of Dumbledore's army. And one of the things that I think is most interesting about this fic is that all the characters that it focuses on are relatively minor. You don't have Ginny or Neville or Luna, who are the characters that you tend to think of when you think of fics that are writing about what was happening at Hogwarts during Deathly Hallows. And this was one of the first post-Deathly Hallows fics that I read, and I really liked it. So that's why I brought it up for us to discuss tonight.
You know, I have one thing I want to say, and this is the only time I plan on going off topic on purpose tonight. It's only for a little
bit. Really?
Anytime. Yeah, I promise. Keep in mind, I said intentionally, by the way. If I accidentally go off, that's different. But anyhow, anytime somebody says Dumbledore's army, it's because I'm used to just hearing the DA. I keep remembering the scene in the Order of the Phoenix movie where the only part I actually like Gambon, where he does the, it's Dumbledore's army, not Potter's army, blah, 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 blah. And then he does the whole Phoenix escape thing. And that was just pretty much an awesome scene. And I get reminded of it every time I hear that. And I'm going
to
be quiet.
Well, you know, I kind of like that scene, too, because Kingsley turns to Fudge and he's like, you know, you got to admit, it's got glass.
See, I didn't like it when I saw it because I didn't remember that it was in the book. I was like, on the whole way home, I was bitching about how they added this stupid stuff, and then I looked in the book, it was there, and I shut up.
You didn't remember that? I always thought that was so funny in the book. You know how
I think that must be a real American thing because everyone always raves about it, and I'm like, okay, yeah, all right. I'm just like, everyone's like, it's so good, it's so funny. I'm like,
did you say Sean. Sharing? Or shearing.
Shearing. We were shearing the
Oh, okay. I thought I heard you say sharing.
Sharing.
Like,
here we
share?
Are.
No, he didn't want to share the sheep.
Was he like yours?
That was the whole problem. He didn't want to share his
here
sheep.
We are again. Back again to vowel sounds.
What was it yesterday?
We lost the one from evaporative.
It's evaporative.
Evaporative. Yes.
And Mike's going, what? What did BS had to translate?
How to speak Australian.
Yeah. Got an air conditioner. I've only got evaporative cooling though, so it's not very effective. Then I have to keep going outside, you know, so I can't sort of sit in it all the time. And there's one building at uni that's got no air conditioning. It's been awful.
You said a sentence in there that I had no idea what you said. Right after air conditioner?
Evaporative air conditioning. Is that what you mean?
I still don't know what that was that you just said.
Evaporative air conditioning. You don't know what that is?
All I hear is
evaporative.
Evaporative.
Oh, okay. Evaporative. I have to translate it into American.
It's evaporative.
I could hear like air conditioning.
An evaporative air conditioner.
Wow.
Poor Mike. He's not here to defend himself.
I have an evaporative egg.
That is the strangest.
What?
Yeah, I used to think the How to Speak Australian commercials were just silly, but now I'm thinking maybe we need a...
How to Speak Australian. You had commercials about How to Speak Australian.
We did.
It was actually a beer
Australian.
Commercial.
Yeah. Like, it's not been... Yeah.
Foster's Australian for
it's
beer.
Not been too long ago. Foster's Australian for
Foster's.
For beer.
Foster's.
Need to bring at least
not
bring
bastards.
Back Crocodile Dundee.
You call that a knife? This is a knife.
Knife. A knife.
Do you remember that time when he pulls out the can of like SpaghettiOs or something and chucks it all the way down the street in like downtown New York and gets right guy in the head? That is fantastic.
I think it's the second one where he walks over there.
Yeah, that wasn't the first
one.
In
the train station. Is it the first one? And he walks over them like he's walking over the top of the sheep. That cracks me up every time. Excuse me. Sorry. Excuse me. Pardon me. And they're all just looking at him and his clothes. I tell you who's fallen out of favour in Australia and probably the rest of the world, but Tom Cruise. Because when he dumped Nicole Kidman, that was it. You know, all the rest of the couch jumping and the rubbish, irrelevant. He dumped Nicole Kidman? No more.
You
no
have
more
to be
Tom.
Retarded to dump Nicole Kidman.
Tom Cruise, especially for Katie Holmes, but anyway.
Well, you just I was angry at him for dumping Nicole Kidman. I would do Nicole Kidman.
He used to, that's who you turn gay for.
I'd turn gay for Nicole Kidman.
Now, so he used to be Australia's favourite son-in-law. Not anymore.
I'd turn gay for Nicole Kidman. I would.
Good.
I would.
Well, good on you for admitting it and backing me up, because...
She's hot. She is.
She is hot. I'm not afraid to admit it.
Who's hotter?
Naomi Watts is hotter.
Oh, she's pretty hot, too. I'd do her as well.
Naomi Watts? I wonder if we can get a Tom Cruise to come on the next Peon cast.
He might have. I doubt he's read the fic.
I bet he has. I have a feeling he's sitting there just like, I don't know if he's reading necessarily Harry Potter fics, but he's doing some crazy, ridiculous thing or... like building huge, massive model trains or something just really off the wall.
Then he can start model that, train cast.
I used to have a thing for model trains. And you know, you ever play with the little Richard? Cars that you maybe, I don't know, might be kind of... Yeah, okay. Sorry.
We are
I'll
so
shut up.
Far gone at this point.
Sorry.
Let's just back up.
Yes. So, I believe I already made some comments about it before our off-topic trip through Hollywood, so...
So, Michael Corner, I was actually kind of interested with the way they talked about him here. I mean, I sort of really hated him when he was in, like, Half-Blood Prince. Well, I don't think he really had much...
He didn't have any lines. He was just kind of mentioned as being there. I don't think he really did anything to hate.
Yeah. We should do the whole thing that we did last night with who our favorite one was.
From me saying that my favorite was Hannah, because she never really had anything in canon. We never got to find out anything about her beyond the fact that her mother died. And I liked how, through her drabble, it shows how it made her stronger and it gave her the courage to basically to stand up to Snape and the Karrows without really standing up. So she gives the teachers incorrect reports on her fellow students and she stares Snape down lying to his face. She organizes meetings and makes sure the first years keep to their buddy system. Hannah is a lioness and they killed her mother. She protects her cubs and vows they will not kill her family again. And that happens to actually be the last line of the fic, and I think that may be why Hannah's was my favorite drabble, because it leaves you with a really powerful feeling.
You see, I agree with you that I like Hannah the best, sort of a little bit differently, though, because, like you said, in the canon, you don't really hear much about her, but, like, with this, it kind of goes on about how she's gone through these things, and she's sort of, you know, stepping up her rebellion in her own ways, protecting people, lying as she needs to, either, I don't know if Snape caught her, or if he just avoided it, but that's a whole other story, but, I mean, she's doing all this stuff, and it just, it's got a level of awesomeness in her character, and I just really enjoy reading it.
Mm-hmm. That's what I meant. I guess I just didn't word it
no, I
in
got
a way
that.
That indicated that's what I meant. I mean, it's the way, the thing is, it's like, if Hannah was characterized like this in all the fics about
yeah.
Hannah, then
yeah.
I would totally read tons of fics about Hannah, you know?
As would I. I also enjoyed, he's not my favorite by far, but I also enjoyed the one about Ernie McMillan.
I did too.
Because he, you know, it goes into about, he ends up getting along better with Seamus, because Seamus is lonely without Dean, and then he's just... I don't know. I just really like
him. I like him because he's humbled. You know, it's like he finally realizes that why the war is going on and why blood doesn't mean anything, and now Justin's gone, and...
I like the bit where it says, he likes the DA, even if the Ravenclaws are a bit uppity and the Gryffindors are a bit gung-ho. To his surprise, he likes Seamus' company. With Dean also in hiding, Ernie suspects Seamus feels lost and useless too. I think it's interesting, to his surprise. This is their seventh year, they've spent 6 years as schoolmates, and it takes this long, and he's surprised that he actually likes Seamus's company.
I think that just goes to show how indicative the divisiveness of the house system is altogether, but anyway, that's just one little detail I wanted to say.
My thing is, I really liked Padma.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I liked Padma because she turned into Madame Pomfrey.
Yeah.
And she took it upon herself to be the DA healer, and she was very, very strong. And we didn't get to see very much of Padma at all in canon. And all we saw was Parvati, and Parvati was...
brain dead.
Chatty and social and catting around with Lavender, and so we didn't really have anything to base Padma on, other than the fact that she was a Ravenclaw, and so we would automatically assume that she was smart and bookish. So here we have, you know, information on Padma, and we're finding out that, you know, basically she's a pillar of strength for the DA, and she basically is one of their leaders and somebody that they can all turn to when it gets really bad. And so I think that it's interesting that we're seeing a character that basically we saw nothing of in canon turn out to be somebody that's so pivotal.
Yes.
During this year.
And I did like Parvati and Lavender's bit, because you always sort of see them as being just these really superficial girly girls, but I think this fic showed the depth of their friendship, and I liked that.
And I did, too. I really like... You pointed it out last night when we talked about it. I'll point it out again, is that Lavender says that she knows that Padma is Parvati's true sister, and given the choice, Parvati would save Padma over her, and it makes her sad because she treasures Parvati over everyone. And yet, when you go to Parvati, Parvati says she knows that Lavender is wrong, and that Padma is her blood sister and her twin, but her other half is Lavender's Lavender. There isn't any way to describe her other than that Parvati would drown without her. And that goes a lot to talk about how much you need your friends around you for support and how important it is to have a net of friends around you when times are bad. And then it jumps down and parallels the whole Seamus and Ernie McMillan.
And I think that in some ways, it paralleling what's going on with Harry, Ron, and Hermione as well. During Deathly Hallows, when Ron goes, Harry and Hermione are just, it's not the same without him when he's gone. And if Ron didn't come back, you know, Harry would have drowned. And it's sort of like, yeah. Harry and Hermione, it's established in the book. And like, I know this is going to hurt Richard, but that they have a brotherly, sisterly thing going on.
Yes.
But they still need Ron, their friend. They still need, you know, Ron saves Harry's life. And then, you know, of course, Hermione needs him and stuff. So it's almost like a parallel there of friendships as well. You know what I mean?
But the whole thing that I think we're noticing in all these stories as well is that the war itself actually didn't really get really, really started, in my opinion, until the stuff in DH started happening. And now before all of it really started going down, of course, you had Lavender, who was one of the catty girly girl types, and she had her people, and everybody had their own sort of thing. But once everything started happening, like, it became real for everybody because it was their classmates that were getting hauled off by the ministry and stuff like that was going on, that everybody started going under these sort of transformations, and people started, their attitudes changed. Obviously, they're detailing it pretty well here in this fic. It's one of the reasons I liked it so much is that it's showing how everybody...
In very few words, it interties so much about Deathly Hallows. It says so much in just these few little drabbles. It just tells us a lot about what happened.
That's what I was trying to say.
You know, in that first read, if you read through it quickly, you're just like, oh, yeah, that's a few drabbles. And then you go back and you start looking at it again and you think about it in terms of really what happened, and you're like, whoa, that's kind of heavy.
I was trying to say something similar to that, but I failed myself. You did excellently.
I'm sorry, Richard.
No, you helped it make me not seem retarded, so thank you.
Always a plus.
Yes.
Always a plus.
So do we have anything else to bring up?
Not about the fic.
I'll tell you what we're missing. I don't know if we want to recreate it. Is that why aren't there any Slytherins in this fic?
What we're missing is what Mike wanted us to talk about.
He wanted us to talk about why. His question was, why aren't there any Slytherins in the fic?
That's what I
and
just
there aren't
said.
Any Slytherins in the fic because there weren't any Slytherins in the DA. And this is a fic about the DA, so there are not going to be any Slytherins in it. I don't think it shows an anti-Slytherin bias on the part of the author. I think it shows the fact that it's a story about the DA.
Of course, Slytherin. They only had a better... better representation of what it meant to be Slytherin than Draco Malfoy in the books.
Well, they had a really good representation in Snape, but of course he had to be all
I was about to go there.
Because he was being, you know, a spy.
Slughorn was a good representation.
Yes,
of Slytherin.
He was. True. Thank you, Jen.
Jesus Christ, Slughorn.
Well, he came. He came through.
Slughorn
did indeed come through.
I have nothing against Slughorn, but he suffers from the lack of courage and indifference that most of his house had until he was convinced by Dumbledore to join the cause. That's all.
That is not true.
I feel that way.
No, he came back. I mean, he came on his own. I mean, he came and she said he came back and he brought reinforcements. I mean, who do you think called Charlie Weasley in Romania to tell him, hey, your family's dying, why don't you come help?
We don't know how that happened. We just know that Charlie was running past Slughorn because he's slow, but at the same time, I'm not saying he didn't do a good job after he was brought back. I'm just saying that he was running around hiding for a year.
But that's not because he's Slytherin. That's not because he's
Slytherin.
That was
just because he was old and fat.
That's because he's right. Who he is. That's because he's who his person is.
Yeah, there's lots of people that would have done that, like, I'm sure.
It's because he ate crystallized pineapple, you know? I mean, this was the kind of dude he was.
It's because he's awesome.
The way well, it looks like to me that...
He wore velvet smoking jackets.
Indeed.
And pajamas.
Do you think he wanted to get them bloody? That's not
okay,
fun.
Okay, hang on. Come on. Hang on a second.
Slughorn didn't get his nails dirty. Come on.
He's a bit of a dandy, isn't he?
Maybe it's the Gryffindor me saying this, but everybody else who stood up and took a stand at the beginning to fight, people who had backbones, people who actually cared about more than themselves, I'm not saying he didn't, but it took a lot for him to actually do that. He had to have a great deal of not only baiting, convincing, and stuff to...
But by the time Harry gets the memory from him, he has finally realized how wrong he is.
Yep, I mean, and he was hiding because he knew how wrong he was.
I'm not saying he was bad.
And by the end, he charges into battle with the best of them, so...
Right, head of the thing.
I have to vote with P.S. that I was very
proud of
Sludge. You guys
are twisting my words,
yay.
Come on. What I'm saying, all I'm saying is...
Okay, and on that note, that was the D.A. Drabble series by Cainby.
Yes, and should we say what we're doing next week? We should. Next week we are doing A Distinctly Different Manner of Finding Prince Charming by Maya.
And that is a McGonagall Flitwick fic?
It is indeed.
Yeah.
That's going to be interesting. I look forward to reading that.
It's pretty snarky Minerva.
Yeah.
Nice.
And there'll be a link, so make sure you check it out.
Yep. This is P.S.
I'm Jen 2.
I'm Keza.
And I'm Richard.
Good night. Bye.
Good night.
Okay. Night, everybody.
Bye.
Good night.
So long. Farewell.
Au revoir.
Bye-bye. Okay, I have to bring up something incredibly exciting. I can't stand it. I have to hear it.
I've got a map! I've got a map!
Tell us.
Of where everybody is. And it's got all the people on it.
Look
at the colors. They're divided by house.
I sent Keza a care package. And in the package, I sent her a surprise. And the surprise was a big wall map of the United States. And on it, I marked all of the regular Poofwanians by house of where they lived that I could find.
Weren't we just talking about people knowing too much about us?
Oh, dude, I give out my address, my phone number.
Like I said, all she has to do now is get latitude and longitude and just hook up an ICBM and just shoot it right at us and we're done.
I mailed that box 3 weeks ago. It was supposed to take 6 to 10 days.
Must have fell off the boomerang.
The people at customs have given me a pamphlet. It says we've opened it for inspection because we thought on the x-ray that there was an item of concern. But we didn't take anything out. And here is a lovely pamphlet of what you can mail to Australia because I need that.
Maybe they thought it was weird that you had a map with locations pointed. You know, like maybe they thought it was places you wanted to put a bomb.
I don't know. It's got, it could have been the pin on the back of the St. Patrick's Day badge thing. Maybe they thought I was going to kill people with it. I don't know. It could have been the goldfish. Maybe they thought they were real. You know, flora and fauna and all that.
No, it was the Hidden Valley Ranch dressing mix. That's what it was.
Yeah, probably.
You're gonna.
But how would that show up in an x-ray? I've got butterfingers. So excited. Hey, I could win a big cash prize in American Idol.
Oh, yes.
See inside back to
you're not American.
I bet you anything must be a legal resident of the 50 U.S. D.C. Puerto Rico. I don't qualify. I'm so depressed. You want to talk about the fic? We'll talk about the fic.
Somebody's got to do it. Somebody has to be responsible.
And you know whose name starts with an M? McGonagall.
McGonagall, that's right. Minerva. McGonagall. She's like M squared.
She's also this character in this strange story. I don't know if any of you have ever heard of it before. It's called
A Distinctly Different Manner of Finding Prince Charming.
How did you know that?
By Maya.
So we need to introduce ourselves. We've introduced Minerva. Now we need to introduce ourselves.
Welcome to Peon Cast, everyone. This is your host, Ryan, back for another episode of Fun-Filled Adventure. Jen? Jen, do you have something to say?
Oh, hi, I'm Jen.
I'm Lady Chi.
I'm Bobcat Goldthwait. Let's do this.
Okay, let's do it right.
Fine. Let's do it right. Welcome to Peon Cast. I am your host, Mr. Michael.
I am P.S.
I'm Jen 2.
I'm Keza.
And I'm Richard 1.
Richard 1.
I suppose I'm PS1.
Actually, I had a PS1 one time, but I sold it.
I only have a PS2, and I'm not going to get a PS3 until they stop making games for PS2.
So they played a game in this fic. No. It's called Quidditch.
Yeah.
Yes, they did play a game in this fic called Quidditch. Quidditch is a fun game that they all played in this fic.
And I noticed that Minerva is a raging bitch about it, too.
She hit Tommy in the head with a butcher.
But he deserved it. He's Tommy.
Who wouldn't
hit Tommy in the head?
Richard didn't put together that he was Tom Riddle. I have to share that.
Yeah, well, at least I knew what number 10 was, Mike.
I worked it out the first time they said it. Little Tommy, I worked it out. I'm smart.
It took me a couple of times for them to say corny, and I'm like, corny?
Yeah, it was corny, I think, that got
me. Yeah, that one
what
took me a while.
What kind of freaking name is corny?
That one took me a while.
Corny is fudge.
Well, I know, I got that, but after I started thinking about corny.
Cornelius? Corny? Well, if your name's Cornelius, what's your nickname going to be?
Well, I realized that, but the whole time I just like, who would call their kid Corny?
I thought it was a surname. I thought it was a surname at first.
Corny didn't mean corny back then.
Who knows what it meant back then?
Well, whatever it was, I felt bad for the kid.
So you felt bad for Fudge. Look what fanfiction does to you.
So what did you guys think of it, though? Did you like it?
I liked little Tommy doing the Cruciatus curse. I was very amused and happy with that.
You would be, Richard.
Yeah, that was a highlight. I actually liked the writing style. I've got a couple of bits highlighted that I really like. Just the way that the humor comes across. Nobody tended to approach Minerva despite the fact she was undeniably attractive, apart from times like these when she wore an expression suggesting she'd swallowed a ruler.
You know, I highlighted that exact same passage.
And then I've got another one. Rosemary and Poppy trailed very reluctantly after Minerva and Vivian to their first charms class. They seemed to feel that watching Professor Flitwick being aggressively short was punishment too great for mortals to bear. For those who are just catching up with this, Professor Flitwick was coming and he was a star because he's a dueling champion. And of course, they've been completely let down totally by his height.
Well, I really liked their references back and forth to canon.
Yeah,
there are a lot of little things if you look at it that directly refer back into canon.
Yeah, it's really well intertwined, I think, with other people. And there's a bit where Hagrid turns up.
I'm looking here, it's on the second page when they're saying, I wonder why he's not at the feast, and they're talking about Flitwick, you know, coming in, and I wonder if he's going to take this seriously and if he plans to coast on a celebrity and if he'll make us fail all our owls. That reminded me of, maybe not of Hermione, but it might have reminded me of something she would have said later, but of course, you know, to me that just tied in with Lockhart and what Minerva might have been thinking later on in her life with Lockhart.
Well, yeah, when you get to the end of the fic.
And she does think it. The last scene is set in
1992. Yeah, when Lockhart turns up, and it's just quite funny. But she is a bit Hermione-like. But here's the bit with Hagrid. Professor Flitwick was sitting beside one of the new first years, an immense child who Vivian thought must have swallowed a bottle of Skelligro in his youth. He was taller than Professor Dumbledore and could have picked up Professor Flitwick in one hand. I just like the way these things are written and the images that it makes.
There was one that really cracked me up. There was one about Dumbledore that made me, I just laughed. And Professor Dumbledore just smiled and murmured something about how it was extraordinarily interesting that people would arrange things for someone if he simply seemed a little vague.
Or like the bit where later on when she's the angry commentator, and she's like screaming and screaming, and then Flitwick has a little comment like, well, it's important, commentaries are unbiased. You know, like, I think that's the canon dig you were talking about. Like, you wonder why he always gets on Lee Jordan, and you're like, oh, that's why.
Yeah. I like when stuff like that happens in past fics.
Because you're a past fic person.
Well, I liked it because I always like past fic because that's pretty much, like, if I could afford to, there was enough of it, it would be pretty much all that I would read. So I always enjoy like a look into the characters before the canon and what was going on at Hogwarts in those years, so I did enjoy that.
But you guys can guess why I like the story.
Why?
Why?
Well, simply put, what I enjoyed most, and it was kind of different because it's not even a real main part of the story, was actually the stuff for Tom Riddle. Because at first I thought, hey, you know, this is crap. You know, Tom Riddle will never be this way. But Mike's like, don't be stupid. This is before HPP. So I was like, oh, okay. So I put into that pre-HPP mindset. I really enjoyed the characterization a lot of the time for Tom Riddle about how he was sad about his past and then everything that didn't go quite right for him. So
yeah, because keep in mind, this is written, it's either right before or right after Order of the Phoenix. So that, you know, what we see of Tom Riddle in the flashbacks in book 6, she didn't have that to work with when she wrote this.
I don't know, but I found a lot of little things about Tom Riddle in this that I didn't find him very sympathetic at all.
Oh, I didn't think he was sympathetic at all, personally. And was I reading it wrong? I always wonder when I read this if I'm just... But it sounds like when he gets with Vivian, was he using Imperio on her?
Yeah, he was.
Oh, was that? That was what I thought, but I wasn't 100% sure.
Yeah, because all up through it, they turn him down the whole time, and then she's a little bit drunk, and he manages to get a hold of her, as it were. I don't think that she did that, would have done that willingly.
Yeah, that was my impression, too.
I'm not trying to say he's a good character. I mean, a good person. He's an excellent character. He's not a good person by any shape of the word, but it fleshes it out a little bit, and it makes him that much more interesting.
Well, it's like he's a person.
There's a bit that I highlighted where he's talking to Corny that was really interesting. Minerva smiling at Flitwick, I think, and it says, anyway, it starts, that was when Vivian saw the smile, which is McGonagall's. It recurred until she got used to it, and the boys in school seemed attracted to it. Combined with the black swishing hair and the green eyes she set off with her new emerald green accessories. She was asked to Hogsmeade quite a lot that year. She might have been asked more, but as it turned out, Tommy's glares were effective and intimidating. It hardly mattered since she turned them all down cold and continued to scorn Tommy absolutely. I don't know why she won't give me a chance, Vivian heard poor Tommy say angrily once. I don't know either, Corny agreed. I mean, you've got a tremendous air of authority and charisma and very nice eyes. Tommy shoved him. Don't talk to me like that. You know it disturbs me. Yes, Tommy, said Corny. Sorry, Tommy. It's all right, Tommy announced in a brooding voice. I'm used to rejection. And it just made me laugh because it was a perfect characterization of Cornelius, you know, doing the whole sucking up thing.
It goes on just a little bit more, and he's like, and Cornelius goes, oh, well, I didn't mean to judge. Well, you know that. If your father looked like you, he must have been a very handsome man. Corny, Tommy explained warningly. We're back to the bad place. Sorry, Tommy, sorry. We don't like the bad place. It won't happen again. You know, to me, I just, like, had Cornelius as gay written all over it. You know, I was like,
yeah. But that's a real, you can really see their characters there, where he's like, we don't like the bad place. and that's what, it's like the fleshing out, you can really sort of see them interacting and stuff.
I don't know if it's intentional, but I also kind of thought I saw an attempt to parallel Tommy with Harry a little bit, in the sense that the bit with the Christmas presents, where he's talking about never getting Christmas
presents. I had that highlighted.
Immediately popped in my head was Harry Potter. I don't know, if you have it highlighted, you could read it maybe.
I have it highlighted.
Yeah.
Christmas was quiet and nice. Professor Flitwick gave every student a present chosen specially for them, and Vivian almost cried over her Muggle abacus. Thank you so much, Tommy said, clutching his book on unicorns and looking almost lost for words for once. No one's ever given me a Christmas present before. Well, and then I thought it was interesting that he got a book on unicorns, which then I thought, ugh, that filthy little boy got a book on unicorns from Professor Flitwick.
Oh, I didn't even put that together. Oh,
where
my
he
God,
got
you're
it
right.
from.
That's why I had it highlighted. I'm like, that filthy little boy got his first Christmas present, and he used it for evil. He used it to learn about unicorns so he could suck their blood.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'll just say something in general about Maya, maybe. She's one of my favorite authors. I would recommend any of her stories to anyone, personally. This isn't, I mean, I like this story a lot, but this isn't even one of her better ones.
The only thing that really squicked me, and Mike is going to laugh about this because, you know, we've been around some of my little idealisms before, is just the whole student-teacher thing. Mm. And it was, you know,
I do think it's very clear that they don't get together until after she graduates.
Well, and Phileas was pretty clueless, so that's the one thing that didn't, you know, that made it okay for me. There was one thing about Minerva that I really liked in the story, because she's so uptight in canon at times. You see her at times when you think, you know, she's really cool. You know, you see little glimpses of her where she's not quite so straight-laced. But in this, she's just so in your face. You know, calling people toe rags and telling people she'd rather eat her lower intestine. You don't imagine her being like that at all. And so her just being such a raving witch, literally, I thought was kind of just hilarious.
I think that's kind of one of the things that bothered me. Yeah, well, you had a character for humorous purposes, and I don't really
see. I disagree with you.
That.
Actually, I think it was one of the strengths of the story, because I compare it to actually what J.K. did to Dumbledore in book 7.
is that people like Dumbledore and Minerva, when we read them in the books, at first they kind of seem like these like wise older people who have always been old, and they're kind of, Dumbledore's the elderly kind grandfather always, and Minerva's the strict proper English matron always. But they were young once. They were, you know, they weren't always like this. And so, you know, book 7, we see Dumbledore, well, he was totally different as a kid. Same thing with Minerva in this story.
I think McGonagall actually does have quite a sense of humor, though. Like when she tells Peeves how to unscrew the chandelier. and when she's talking to Umbridge in the office, when Umbridge is coughing and she ignores her. And when Harry's sent there on, like, the first day and she listens to the whole thing and then she says, have a biscuit, Potter. You know, I think she's actually got quite a sense of humour.
I see echoes of the canon Minerva in this Minerva. Like, I can see how this girl grew up into the woman we know in the books.
Anything else?
I don't know. No thoughts on it from anyone? You all liked it?
I liked it. Sounds like. It was a good pick. It was a good read.
You would want to read something else of hers sometime?
We want to read something else of Maya's. We will. Trust me.
Our next fic is Open at the Close by DQ Bunny, and there will be a link.
Thanks for listening to Peoncast this week. Good night. Good luck. Live safely.
Good night.
Night.
Medicine need love to come.
Yeah.
You don't like the bad place.
Old medicine need love to come.
He's found the box. He's inspecting
old
it.
Old medicine need love to come.
Rubius Hagrid.
You will invite me.
He's found the box. He's found the box. He's inspecting it.
I wonder when I can see you.
He's found the box. He's inspecting it.
Game's over.
And now, a word from our peons.
Hey, Keza, can you, like, sing a traditional Australian kids' preschool song?
Mike's insane.
But there must be, like, some little rhyme that, like, every little Australian kid knows, and they go around singing. Well, there's so many American ones. Do an Australian one.
Peanut sat on the railway track. His heart was all aflutter. Train came rolling down the track. Toot, toot, peanut butter.
Keza, do you know Old MacDonald?
Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O, and on that farm he had a kangaroo, E-I-E-I-O. No, seriously, they do sheep and pigs and cows and stuff.
See, that's everywhere. I probably know a lot of folk songs from being a Girl Scout. How many roads must a man walk down?
The one you were just singing is a Bob Dylan song.
Oh, is it Bob Dylan? Oh my.
I've never heard that.
I thought it was like a legitimate old song.
Toot, toot, chugga, chugga, big red car, driving near and you travel far. Toot, toot, chugga, chugga, big red car, we're gonna ride the whole day long.
I don't know what that is.
That's the Wiggles.
I know what I want Keza to sing. Sing Captain Planet, Keza.
Okay.
London Bridge is falling down, falling down, falling down. London Bridge is falling down, my fair lady.
Jen, were you a Girl Scout?
Only till second grade. I thought it was lame.
Late last night, while we were all in bed, Mrs. O'Leary put a lantern in the shed, and when the cow kicked it over, she blinked her eyes and said it'd be a hot time in the old town tonight.
We must have learned different songs. You know the one song that I can remember from Girl Scouts? Oh, I wish I was a little bar of soap, bar of soap. Oh, I wish I was a little bar of soap, bar of soap. I go slidey, slidey, slidey over everybody's hidey. Oh, I wish I were a little bar of soap.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one vaguely.
Girl Scout camp. Girl Scout camp. Oh, I don't want to go to Girl Scout camp. Gee, Mom, I want to go home.
Yankee Doodle went to town, riding on a pony. Stuck a feather in his ankle. I can't even sing it, macaroni.
What does it even mean?
I don't know.
Like, is that a historical person? Like,
no, he's a figure. He's a metaphorical figure, Yankee Doodle. Like, for the Yankee people who live, like, in the Yankee part.
But Did they even have macaroni back then?
No, probably not.
You focused on the wrong part of the song, P.S.
That's the part that always confused me when I was a child, though. You know, I mean, like, he stuck a feather in his hat.
I want to know why he's Doodles Yankee.
Actually, the songs is actually, if I remember correctly, the British actually sang it, and they did it to make fun of us during the Revolutionary War.
I think so, too. Yeah.
Who's laughing now? That's what I want to say to them, Mike. What do you think?
Rubber ducky. You're the one.
You make bath time lots of fun. Rubber ducky, I'm awfully fond of you. Whoop-dee-doo, every day when I make my way to the tubby, I find a little fella that's cute and yellow and chubby. Rub-dub-dubby.
I've been working on the railroad all the livelong day. Someone's in the kitchen with Dinah. Someone's in the kitchen, I know. Someone's in the kitchen with Dinah, strumming on the old banjo.
I want someone to sing Captain Planet before we go, then I'll be satisfied.
I don't think I remember it.
I don't know that one.
I don't know Captain Planet.
How could you people not know Captain Planet?
I do. I know that whole song.
Richard's will sing it. He knows it. Sing it, Richard.
Richard's gonna sing it?
Yeah, right. No, Richard's gonna provide lyrics.
It was Phil Collins? Seriously, Phil Collins?
Go sing it, P.S.
I already sung enough stupid songs. I'm not doing fire. Captain Planet's part. I'm not doing Earth.
Fire. Wind. Water. Heart. No, I didn't.
Did you eat paint?
I would be fire. Richard would be heart, I think. And Keza would be earth.
No, we're not doing Captain Planet. Won't.
What would I be?
We should do the fic.
I always wanted to be wind because I thought Linka was so cool.
Richard thought
I wanted to be a Power Ranger, but that's not.
Okay, this is what I think of this line of commentary at the moment. Hi, and welcome back to Peoncast. I'm Keza.
I'm Jen 2.
Mike.
I'm P.S.
Richard 1.
We're doing Fluff today. It's Harry Ginny Fluff.
Yay!
Yayness.
Jen 2 is dancing.
Let me just make sure I got a small garbage pail before we start talking about this.
It's called Open at the Close, and it's by DQ Bunny. I don't know about everyone else. I was sort of left with this great gaping hole, and it sort of filled it in a little bit.
Well, I had a great gaping hole, but it was a different kind.
A sluggish one?
Yeah, I think everyone's got a different hole, but, you know, left in their heart. At the end, shut up! Well, that, you're rude, people.
Well, see, I mean, your hole was wondering different things than
hey,
mine.
Nobody's hole was really as bad as mine. My dog died on the day that DH released.
No,
my best friend died on that day. So not so only was I meaning, you know, like the end of Hedwig died. I must have bawled for an hour.
Oh, don't say that.
Hedwig exploded.
Dobby.
Not Hedwig.
I don't think I'll ever get
We're
over
Dobby. We're
supposed
to be talking about
Hedwig
Fluff.
Dobby died. Fred died.
It's just like a bloodbath.
Like, I felt bad for George, kind of all alone now. Like, they were always a pair through the first 7 books. I
guess his brother's girlfriend.
Oh, yeah, that's so healthy.
You never saw Fred without George or George without Fred. They always did everything together. It's kind of like half of him died.
And this has everything to do with Open at the Close.
But what I didn't get to was I was going to segue into saying that I was so depressed that I did this. Same thing that Keza did. I went and read this fluffiness, and it made me very happy.
Yay!
Because there I was so sad, you know, that my Samson dog went and left me. And then I read this.
Everything was okay. So it gave me that sense that they're
And everyone was
okay.
acting like Molly couldn't hear them talking about sex. And we all know that she could.
Oh, yeah, totally.
I mean, it was just like, it made everything better again for the 15 minutes it took me to read it. And since then, I've read it about 20 times.
That's the purpose of Fluff. Make you feel better.
You know what I think is kind of funny? It's like Fluff, more than any other sort of fic, is kind of there. Very, very centered on the ship. I mean, like I can admit that there are some Harry Ginny fics that I like, even though I really don't like that ship, but Fluff and also probably like really intense angst. Those two are kind of like a party for the shippers. Yeah. And
but do you think you can have Fluff without a ship?
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger.
Fluff needs to be built around a relationship, but doesn't have to be a romantic one. Like, I think I've read friendship sort of fluff where it's kind of just the trio being kind of funny and go lucky.
Is that really fluff though? Romanticism?
I would think it's romantic, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, otherwise, I think
it's
just
my question
be plain old
what makes
gem.
A romance fluff rather than anything else? Like, what is it that makes something fluff?
What makes makes it fluff instead of romance.
Like, well, that's what I'm asking you. Like, what makes
I think romance has gotten more of a plot. Like, romance is how Harry and Ginny, like, built their relationship and fell in love. But fluff is just, like, they're already together, and then here's a small moment in their relationship that's very sweet.
I think so, too, because...
fluff is something you read when you don't want to think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, like, romance has got a plot.
Like, why can't you have something without plot that's just fun that doesn't involve a relationship?
Because usually then it becomes comedy at that point.
You can't have, like, friendship kind of thing going.
Most people would then think it was slash.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
And I only know one of us here that would enjoy that.
What if it would be as a girl and a boy were friends?
Like it was a Harry Hermione moment. Well, then all the harmony shippers would think that there was
something
there.
Turn it into harmony fluff.
We're way off course.
Drama is like...
Drama is when Ginny throws herself off.
Drama. Yeah. I mean, drama is like... Drama is when intense stuff happens.
As soon as you got fluff that's not shippy, does it become comedy?
Yeah, well, this is fluff because it's a romance.
I mean, George just cracks me up every time.
Yeah.
It is comedy fluff. That is what it says right there in small letters.
I don't get why fluff has to be romance. I think it probably commonly is, but I'm sure you could write a fluff that isn't.
Come on, Hermione. What's a harmless wager among family and close friends? George sauntered over to Hermione. He draped his arm over her shoulder and she glowered at him. After all, Lee Jordan and I have a bet about Ginny and Harry. If we win, Gin jumps him. If we lose, Potter will gift her with pity sex to comfort her. You made a bet about our sex life? Harry yelled as loud as he could while still trying to whisper. He tossed a nervous glance over his shoulder at Mr. and Mrs. Weasley, praying that they had suddenly developed a drastic loss of hearing. I'm not hearing this. I'm not hearing this. Ron clasped his hands to his ears and shook his head. My best mate is not sleeping with my sister. I love George.
And then I laughed after it. They laugh after it. They're going, oh, tell me, Ron, you're not serious. And he's just like, bad mental imagery, bad mental imagery. If Harry's had sex with Ginny, I'll have to kill him.
I don't want to see any of his bits interacting with my sister. I've seen him naked.
Then George says...
A couple dozen of non-Weasleys in the box and the other fans within hearing range would love to know how endowed the chosen one is. Would you like us an orange jar?
Wow. And then Harry's jaw is somewhere around his knees and his dignity flung somewhere in the English Channel. You can just see Harry sitting there and they're just taking the mickey out of him really, really badly. And he's just sort of sitting there going, what do I do now? You know, I sometimes wonder, is he ever going to learn to give back as much as he has to take from like George and that? Is he ever going to learn to punch back with a few witty one-liners? Because to me, Harry's always actually been very witty in the bits in Philosopher's Stone where he commiserates with the toilet with flushing Dudley's head down and he would be upset or something like that. I can't remember how it goes. I always find Harry witty and it would be really good if he could, in a fit, come back to the Weasley brothers.
Sometimes I just think the Weasleys are so quick, so out there, that Harry's just completely outdone
by them.
I mean, you've got witty and then you've just got Fred and George, or George singularly. It's like you just have to pause amongst greatness. It's like, why even compete?
I always get the impression in canon that George and Fred were kind of somewhat respectful to Harry and they don't really make him the butt of any of their jokes. Or am I just forgetting key things?
Dude, what are you doing?
Make way, Heir of Slytherin coming
true.
Through.
You're right. Never mind.
Before the second task, when they're making the wagers on whether he's going to die.
That's a far cry from the kind of thing they do to Percy, though. I mean, like the
big but Percy's
thing
a dick.
People in Australia actually use that term.
I do, but I don't know if I use it because I've been reading too much Harry Potter or if it's because I've always used the term git.
We're way off course.
I'm not going to let you risk your life pretending to be me. Well, none of us really fancy it, Harry, said Fred earnestly. Imagine if something went wrong and we were stuck as specky, scrawny gits forever. But, you know, generally speaking,
I think
they're on his side.
I think they do a pretty good job of working them over.
There's a difference between jokes and tricks. I think.
Yeah,
I mean,
see, they don't
trick
even
on Percy.
George is just paying Harry out. He's not playing a trick on him, just paying him out.
They have had Molly the entire time, you know, threatening their lives for touching Harry. So
it sounded wrong.
Okay. I got someone on a fifth like that one.
Bad Richard.
What a wank.
But anyway, as fluffy as this is, getting back to the point. I like the bit at the end where Ginny comes in and she's looking for this old cigar box, and inside it is the snitch that Harry had when he went into the forest, and she put the other snitch in the box, and it's like a symbol because one marked the end of things and this is like something new, so she's going to keep them together. I thought that was really cool.
But interesting
too
that she
so it was like
oh,
sorry, go on.
No, you do.
I was going to change the subject slightly, though.
Go.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger.
I find it was interesting that she was the Quidditch player and that she was the professional seeker.
Well, not really, because...
Because that's canon?
I was always under the impression, maybe you guys never got this impression from the book and I'm just reading too much into it. She kind of wanted to be a seeker and she was always purposely sacrificing her wants to try to protect Harry.
Thinking. Not really your strong suit, is it?
I don't think there was enough in canon for us to know which one she preferred. But the author's notes say that...
I don't think there was enough of their relationship to draw anything.
The author's notes say that she put her as a seeker because it works with the story.
That works too.
Not necessarily because she is a seeker, but because it works with the story. Not a stretch.
Yeah, but do you think she's a world-class seeker, though?
I don't think it matters. It's a piece of luck. See, I think she's going to be a chaser. I think she's actually going to be a chaser, but I liked the way that this was woven into the story to make this story. And I think that's the great thing about fanfic. You can make it, you can manipulate it to do the things that you want to do. It doesn't have to be 100% right what is going to happen. The fic I'm writing at the moment, it's probably totally wouldn't happen, but that's the beauty of it. I can make them do what I like.
Within reason.
Yeah, within reason. Yeah, I mean, you want it to be believable. I mean, I read a story the other day where Molly got pregnant after the final battle and had triplets. So, wow. You know, that I don't think that's within reason myself. It was dreadful.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger.
I read a story similar to that, but it was Harry was the father. But that's, whoa. Hey, that's just another.
What sort of things
that's
you're
even
reading?
Worse. That's
we weren't going to bring that up.
I'm just...
I read one where Harry was the one having the baby.
Oh, my God.
That's
you say
pregnancy.
Harry has a baby?
That's enough.
How is that possible?
It's not.
Oh, wait, for my...
Harry has a baby? How is that even humanly possible? Are you being serious?
It's not. That's kind of the point, because people will write some really retarded stuff.
Are you serious, P.S.?
Let's make the man have the baby.
No.
That's going to be cool.
Have you ever watched Junior with Arnold Schwarzenegger?
No, I haven't.
Oh, my
That's
God.
How you do it.
That movie is so horrible.
Oh, Lord.
You can't do it without Danny DeVito.
I guess I shouldn't even say that George was the other.
Oh, stop
but wait,
it.
How is that possible?
I think you made me read that fic, P.S.
Yes, I did make you
that
read
was
that
so
fic.
Awful. I remember that now.
Because you made me read that fic with
comatose Alice and Harry?
You've got to tell them that. That's worse.
No.
At least George and Harry
we
were both alive.
She was alive.
Oh, no.
It brought
no.
her out of the coma.
So anyway, that was my pick for fluff. It's a feel-good Harry Ginny story for all the people who ship Harry Ginny and want to fill in the great gaping hole left by Deathly Hallows.
Thank
well,
you.
I don't see how
there you go. I just closed off the episode because I can't stand this cadaver sex anymore.
How was that possible that Harry gave birth to a kid?
Yeah.
I don't get this.
Well, before we answer that, I think we should address the more important question. How dumb are you?
He adopted the kid, or did he actually
Mike,
have
do you,
the kid?
Mike, do you want to read
What's
the
that?
Story? Do you want to read the story, Mike?
No, it sounded like you were implying he actually had the kid.
Harry was the pregnant one.
How is that possible?
It's the wizarding
it's
world.
It's not, but magic.
It's called magic.
Hey,
yes, with
yeah,
magic.
How is magic possible?
Isn't, don't you need certain like organs to make that work?
It's magic.
Magic. Magic.
Oh, it's just like a bloodbath in here today.
No, Mike. Emprek is not mentioned in canon.
I don't magic. Think it could happen, magic or no magic.
How do you make stuff float in
you
the air? How is that humanly possible?
It is magic. Nothing
can
stand
in
our
way.
Have to believe we are magic. La 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 la.
That is so Xanadu.
Xanadu. Xanadu.
But I think we should address the more important question.
So I have a question. What
yes.
are we doing, Nick?
Willpower 3 by Tree
yes.
Tree.
I'm Keza.
I'm PS.
I'm Jen 2.
I'm Michael.
And I'm Richard.
And we're Peoncast, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Magic. Magic.
More Aussie songs.
Is Waltzing Matilda really Australian?
Yes, it is.
Huh. I thought it might be one of those things that wasn't.
It was written by,
a real jelly swagman?
Pretty sure it was Banjo Patterson, and now I feel stupid because I don't know. Once a jolly swagman camped by a billabong under the shade of a coolabah tree, and he sang as he watched and waited till his billy bob. Come a waltzing Matilda with me. Waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda, you come a waltzing Matilda with me. And he sang as he watched and waited till his billy bob. You come a waltzing Matilda with me.
And now, a word from our peons.
You know what I got for my birthday today?
That I cannot tell you. It is a secret.
It's the best present ever.
Was it Harry and Jenny?
It was the A&E version of Pride and Prejudice. The old one with Jennifer Earle and Colin Firth.
What's an A&E version?
For you, it would have been BBC.
Oh.
For us, it was played on Arts and
Entertainment.
It's a network that's here that plays decent stuff.
Except when they're playing the thing about the bounty hunter.
Whoa. Wait, no. Don't say that.
No.
I love Dog the Bounty Hunter.
You can't love Dog the Bounty Hunter.
He's awful.
He's got a mullet.
So? That's awesome. Wait, we're not going to go on an anti-me thing. Don't start teaming up
His wife. Have you seen his wife?
Yeah, she's got...
No. I want to see his wife. Hang on.
The guy's got a chubby wife with huge... things.
Oh my god!
Did you finally find her, P.S.?
It's just...
I just found her! Oh my lord! She's It's like Dolly Parton! I mean, that must be her. I mean, it has to be.
I'm sorry. Poor dog. We shouldn't be making fun of him. We'll probably get a lawsuit.
I'm sure he listens to the podcast.
Hey, we can have goals.
I thought our goal was awesome. J.K. Rowling, so now our goal is Dog.
Okay, all right. You're the one that started this.
Which I didn't get to finish because you guys just laughed at me.
And welcome back to PeonCast. I'm Jen 2.
I'm Keza.
I'm PS.
I'm Richard.
And that guy over there is Mike. Maybe we should explain. Mike was a dedicated peon, and he was setting up for the podcast. He says, hi, PFW. The poor dear knocked over his computer and separated the monitor from the rest of it. Now, you may be thinking, what's wrong? All computer monitors are separated from the computer. Mike has a laptop, so he won't be joining us this week.
A great pity indeed.
What we really did, people, we stuck him in the corner and we duct taped his mouth. We gave him a notepad and we're now allowing him to write us notes.
And we will be reading them periodically.
It's our way of controlling the conversation.
Though really, it could have been Richard. I mean...
Wait, what? What? I was just thinking about how in the world he kicked the top off of his laptop, and I heard it could have been me. I was like, how the hell would I do that? That's just crazy, but...
Okay, let's talk about the fic. This week's fic is Willpower 3, Understanding by Tree Tree. It is a Harry Jenny fic, of course, because guess what?
Jen 2 picked it.
I picked it.
Because you guys hate me.
And I ship Harry Jenny. There is no other couple to ship. It is the ship of champions. The only one that sails on my water. Now that I've established that, where's Keza?
I'm right here.
One of the very first reasons I picked this is because before I loved Harry, I loved Jane Austen. And before I loved Jane, sweet Janie, I loved Bill. So all three of them are all wrapped up in this neat, tiny little package. So I have William Shakespeare. I have Sonnet 116. I've got Marianne and Willoughby. I've got Sense and Sensibility. I've got Harry Jenny. It couldn't be better.
That's just everything you want, isn't it, Jen?
I highlighted something that I liked. I liked the beginning when Ginny's by herself and she's upset. There's this little memory of she and Molly when she was a kid. And I really like it when stories include the mother-daughter relationship between Ginny and Molly, because I feel like a lot of them, they don't really have a good relationship. But I like it when it shows them getting along. Because you usually just see Molly's interactions with her son.
I really dislike fics where they show that Molly and Ginny don't get along. I find it annoying and quite unbelievable, actually. Just, I don't know where they get it from, why they would think that Molly and Ginny would not have a good relationship.
I think they barely interact in the books. We see Molly talking to Harry and to Ron, but I don't think Ginny is really in those scenes, or she doesn't really say much.
I don't think it has to follow that they don't get on. I feel like when you're a teenage girl, you often don't get along with your mum. And so I kind of feel... Maybe it's because I've read too many fics by teenage girls who write Molly that way. I don't know. That she's some kind of dragon woman that stops Ginny from being her own person and from doing anything. And I just don't think that Molly would stop any of her kids from being their own person. I mean, she's raising Fred and George. You know, you can't stop them. I think that she has a real respect for the people that her children are. And I don't see her as being overly controlling or disapproving of who Ginny is.
I agree with that. I mean, she doesn't want them to get hurt. hurt, and she doesn't want them to go in harm's way before they're ready. And that's made clear in the books, but I don't believe that she's any less attentive to Jenny than she is to any of her boys.
Yeah.
I would agree. I think it's just got less FaceTime than the other relationships do because it's not really central to what's actually going on. But, I mean, you can assume that it's healthy based upon their other interactions that they show.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. And I highlighted that, too. And that's exactly what I thought when I read it.
I loved the bit where he sent the note that he needs her. I was just like, oh, that is just the way that was written. I just like that the note. It's so short and everything. But then when they're talking, and I'll just read this bit out to you. Ginny, you know you did the right thing running to Bill and leaving yourself exposed only would have meant you both got hurt. It's hard fighting next to people you love, even if it's reassuring to know that they have your back because you're terrified for their safety. It means you might have to ignore their distress when fighting. One false move, one crucial distraction and you're dead. War is ugly and it puts people in impossible situations. And then Ginny thinks, he's been through this more times than I care to count. No wonder he knew just what to say. And I understand the sentiment there, but they just sound too eloquent. It really pulled me out of the fic. I didn't think that Harry would sound like that.
You know? I think I noticed that,
and that
too.
He would know to say. I didn't think he would know what to say.
Yeah. There was just something off about it to me, and I wasn't quite sure. I couldn't quite put my finger on it, and I guess that was probably
I would agree with that.
Like, I think it's a fair point, like what he said, but it sounds too rehearsed and Harry going, you know, I think he would, you know, you did the right thing, Ginny, because you would have just got hurt if you'd gone to Bill, and it's really hard. And then given an anecdote of that time when they're on the chessboard, Hermione wanted to run to Ron, and he's like, no, you have to stay because we're still playing. So he does understand how hard it is, but I didn't think that he would say it in that way. I thought that he would use more of himself to describe it.
Right.
So I just found that really pulled me out because it didn't sound like Harry.
Yeah. There were some things that Ginny said that I thought were mature.
Oh, dearest.
Dearest.
She calls him dearest. And I'm just like, hey, what 15-year-old calls him dearest? No, that's something that my parents do.
I was thinking, well, that's very Molly Arthur-ish.
Yeah.
You know, and they've been in this close relationship for a few weeks now. I don't think they're quite to dearest.
No, I thought that one was like, oh, right, she sounds like a 50-year-old woman, you know. Just 15. It's at end of Half-Blood Prince, so she's 15, and I found that. So I like the premise of the fic, but I don't feel that it was delivered as well as it perhaps could have. That's not to say I think it's all rubbish.
No, I don't. I'm not hearing that from you.
Good.
I did think that they were speaking a bit over their heads.
I did like the whole, I guess this was the premise, but it was just Ginny was thinking about Bill because, I mean, it never occurred to me that, as she says here, that she could have seen it happen and that it really bothered her. I mean, I know it was her brother, so of course she was upset, but...
Yeah, I highlighted that actually, where it says, I kept fighting my Death Eater while I could hear Bill's screams. I will never forget that sound. It felt as if I was being selfish, choosing myself over Bill rather than trying to help him get away from Greyback. So I didn't really think about it that way either.
Was Bill on the stairwell?
Because when Harry comes down the stairs, he steps over Bill's body and he's like, I hope whoever that is isn't dead.
Right.
Because I think he and Ginny are walking away. He says, I stepped over somebody. Who was it? And she says, it was Bill, but he's not dead.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because I knew Ginny was there.
Because he sees the blood.
And I remember him stepping over that body. And I remember, because the thing that grabs me, he slips in someone's blood. And that always just gets me. And I knew Ginny was there because he gets the Death Eater off her before he, you know, keeps going after Snape. But I never really managed to figure out that that body that he stepped over was Bill's. I didn't really get that.
I liked what the writer was saying, but it was hard to believe that Jenny would say it because I felt like it would be something that I would say to someone in the Ravenclaw common room.
What's this?
Later on, after she starts realizing that he's the chosen one and that she knows that he's going to leave, she says something really level-headed. What's happening in the world affects us but doesn't define us. And she gestured between the two of them to indicate that she meant them as a couple, not as individuals. What we choose to do, where we go, no matter what we have to do by ourselves, it's just what life might have to be for a while, but it doesn't change you and me, how we feel, what we want. She trailed off when she saw something she could not that place flicker in his eyes. And then later on, when you go back in the fic and you look at the author's notes, she parallels it to people who are fighting in Iraq and how important it is to have people who support you and to keep the home fires burning, and how Jenny understands, you know, what Harry's about to go off and do. She knew that it was going to involve getting rid of Voldemort, and she knew it was going to be dangerous, and she knew she might not see him. But I'm not sure she would be so,
well, you're not a,
you know,
no, I definitely, accepting. When I finished Half-Blood Prince, I really expected her to try to tag along in Deathly Hallows, and I was really surprised right. when she was just like, okay, bye. You know, here's a kiss in case you die. I mean...
And then as much as I've snarked at a lot of their dialogue in this story, and Jenny starts to talk about her feelings for Harry, and she says, and what would it do to him if he thought I was so fickle with the horrors he was facing? She knew that for his own peace of mind, he needed to know that wherever she was, fighting or not, she was loving him, waiting for him, supporting him. There was no other choice to make because her love for him was unwavering. That's when I start my squee fest. Because at that point, I think that that's where the author starts to get it right for Harry and Jenny's relationship. Whether or not she got it right for me in the dialogue, whether they were too mature or out of character, to me, she really captured how Jenny felt about Harry and how he felt about her.
Yeah.
And then that's where it just gets me with the whole Shakespeare sonnet. Then I start getting all, you know, teary and, oh, love, love, you know. But, oh, it is an ever-fixed mark, and it bears it out even to the edge of doom. Her love for him is unwavering and unconditional, and it doesn't matter what he goes off and what he's going to do. She's going to always, always love him until the day that she dies. And then, of course, I just sit here and, you know, revel in my whole Marianne, Willoughby, William Shakespeare.
I can't really contribute to that. I don't know who Marianne and Willoughby are.
P.S.
Sorry. We did Pride and Prejudice.
Give me an occupation, Miss Dashwood, or I shall run mad.
Do you have to watch?
Just at least sense, watch the movie.
I haven't either, P.S. Don't worry.
Just
thank
at
you.
Least watch the movie.
I think I have watched it. I have watched it if it's the one with Alan
Rickman. Alan Rickman.
I have watched it.
Yeah. And really, I only liked it because the whole thing, I was just imagining parts of Sense and Sensibility, and I had Alan Rickman on the brain the entire time. So really, it was just a whole Alan Rickman spree fest, so that's why I picked it.
So actually, it's got nothing to do with Harry and Jenny at all. It's just about Alan Rickman.
No, I shall go mad. Please give me an occupation.
So that's...
I don't know what you guys are talking
that's
about.
That's all for this week.
We need to interject real quick. I hope you guys don't mind me taking it to a slightly juvenile and perhaps perverted direction. But here, before the five asterisks, is it safe to say that they went that route, or that they didn't actually?
I thought too,
because she hopes that they would have time in the future to achieve even further intimacy. So I don't think they went all the way. No.
No, I don't think they did either. I think they probably stopped just short of.
It says that they.
I'm thinking. Well, I'm not even going to be that crude, but I think a lot of interesting things probably happened here. But being that it's a PG, what rating is this fic?
PG-13.
They couldn't go too into detail of it, but I think Creechy or whatever, however you say the author's name, needs to post a NC-17 version over on the Quidditch page. That's just my recommendation.
I think it could go either way.
I'm almost embarrassed to say that my feeble male mind.
Feeble male mind. Male mind wanted them to shag.
No, hang on. Wait, the point I was going to make is the only part that I really, the first thing I thought about when I finished this story was like, hey, I wonder if they actually, you know, did the deed. But I mean, it's not really that important as far as the story goes. It's just the first thing I thought of, and I guess I'm crazy like that.
I don't think they did.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, that's what
unless,
I'm saying to Richard.
Unless there are people
maybe
out there doing
going
things that I don't
than
know
all
about.
The way.
Right.
Yeah, like, if there's like a way the further to go that I'm going, I'd like to know about it.
Well, there's actually books in your local
maybe
bookstore
Harry
that will tell
Jenny
you how.
Maybe Harry and Jenny are planning to check those out.
Contact Richard by PM. He will give you the links.
Nor is the earth the less or loseth aught. For whatsoever from one place doth fall is with the tide unto another broad. For there is nothing lost that may be found, of sort.
Mike, would you like to hold up a note and tell us that there's something you'd like to say about this fic? We might wait for Mike to scribble. Scribble.
Away. He's got his quill out.
Nah, you guys did a great job. I am in awe of your analytical ability. Hey! Yay! He has nothing else to say.
Poor Mike.
Wow, he's a fast writer.
I wasn't being sarcastic, even LOL.
Look at the grin on his face.
Keza is cooler than a three-legged
Sometimes
octopus.
He still amazes me, though.
That's what Mike says. When octopuses don't have...
That's just stupid.
It is stupid, isn't it, Richard? You've been waiting to say that, haven't you?
Stupid.
You guys can't do it. Only she can do it.
Stupid.
Do you know what I've had on my brain for the last week?
Peanuts on the railway track.
Heart was all a flutter. Train came rolling down the track.
Toot, toot, peanut butter.
I am serious. I have done nothing.
But we were making up.
But sing that stupid peanut song.
I thought we were making it a point to not go off on this tangent.
And, you know, sometimes I'm, like, trying to do it Keza style. Peanut on a railway track. And I know that I'm not doing it.
I do not sound like that.
Thought was all a fatah.
Now you're just mocking me.
I'm not mocking you. This has been... a very productive conversation about Willpower 3, Understanding by Tree Tree, which...
And it's got two before it. We should say that.
I think number two is a bit naughtier.
Watch Richard go and read that.
Richard.
Richard, hey. You don't even like this ship. Why do you want to read
Richard's
it?
Richard's gone there.
Yeah, see, P.S., when it comes to smut, it takes on a whole different level.
It's an author's note. So this time, Willpower involved them keeping on some of their clothing. See, Willpower number two. Obviously, the willpower here was not about keeping their hands off each other.
It was about letting Jenny letting him go. It's willpower because they have to, you know, Harry has to have the willpower to
go. She has to have the willpower to leave her.
Stay tuned for part four where Jenny doesn't take the last piece of cake. All right.
Next week we are doing
Maps to the Stars Homes by Lisby, and it is fantastic. I love it.
I'm looking forward to that.
It is the only Harry Jenny fic that I actually liked.
And I was surprised that you picked a Harry Jenny fic, so I'm looking forward to reviewing it. So for tonight, I will sign off. I am Gen 2.
I'm PS.
I'm Keza.
I'm Richard.
And that guy over there is Mike.
And we all say goodbye.
Bye. Bye, says Mike.
Bye.
Bye.
We told him that he broke his laptop. We really stuck him in the corner with duct tape. You don't remember?
I do.
It was a week ago. It's been so long.
Michael! Shh! Keza's talking to her son is even more funnier this week because she's saying, Michael, be quiet. Michael can't say anything.
We could have Mike on the podcast. Say hello, Michael.
Hello.
Hello. We do have Michael on the podcast. Yay!
There he is.
We've gotten our requisite Michael quota.
Have you got anything else to say?
I don't think he does.
I just got a hug.
Aww.
We have to have him back next week.
Yeah?
So you know what?
What?
I love you. Aww.
I love you too.
He's a peon in training.
Yeah.
Okay, you can go now. Oh, yeah.
Huggle.
He wants a huggle. Okay, you can get off me now.
I want a huggle all the time.
No, I gave you a huggle. Go and put your shoes on. Hey, Michael, can you say stupid?
Stupid.
There you go.
Yes!
You know, I do try and teach my kids not to say stupid. I can't believe I just did that. You're such a bad influence.
Don't blame me. We'll be right back.
everybody, and welcome back to BeyondCast. I'm PS.
I'm Jen 2.
I'm Keza.
I'm Richard.
And just like we said last week, that guy over in the corner with the duct tape, that's Mike. He's got his notepad, and he's poised and ready, and he's waving to all of you.
Let's wave back.
I wonder, though, if he's duct tape, how is he holding his pen?
His mouth is duct taped. Can't you see it?
Ah. Oh, now I see. Sorry, I wasn't paying attention.
Gosh. Tonight, our fic is Maps to the Stars Homes by Lisby. I chose this fic because it's freaking fantastic. Honestly, I think I like everything about it. And I even like the Harry Ginny in it. That's saying something.
That is saying something.
So yeah, this was the only fic that had Harry Ginny in it that I liked. I mean, not that I like didn't like the other fics. What I mean is like in all the other Harry Ginny fics that I've read, the part of the fic that was the relationship part, I didn't like. You're P.S. a bad influence
picked,
on me.
P.S. picked Harry and Ginny.
Well, they weren't in it all that much. There was other stuff in it. It's not like
I know, but the whole, I mean, it is a Harry and Ginny fic. This is very Gryffindor for P.S.
You realize my test came back Gryffindor and Ryan put me in Slytherin anyway.
I know.
I think that sucks because I wanted to be in Slytherin, but I didn't know he was going to take favors like that, and I would have asked if I knew he would change it, but anyway.
I asked for Gryffindor, and then I said, no, wait, I only want it because it's my favorite color. I'm being a colorist, just put me in Ravenclaw. My wedding was Gryffindor colors, and Ross was telling me the other day that I needed to have a blue one and renew my vows because my first one was green, and my second one was red and gold, and I'm like, yeah, but I don't like blue, and she found it very amusing that there was a Ravenclaw he didn't like.
I'm glad you're a Ravenclaw.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm a Ravenclaw too.
If you do a blue wedding, you're just gonna have to have a yellow wedding to make it even.
Right.
Yeah, well, I don't want to do another wedding ever again. But speaking of the fic in which there are no weddings
whatsoever.
What does happen in the fic? I found it very confusing at first because it kept going back and forth, but I did like the character descriptions that this author does. Carol, who had been a sex siren and a screen legend under a different name, now she was just a faded old woman who wore too much makeup. His roommate's name was Melanie. She was 4 years older than he and could put her feet behind her ears. He shared a house with a public servant who spent his weekends dancing in clubs and taking pills, and with a sales girl who worked in an exclusive boutique and spent her wages on tattoos her customers would never see. It describes the people and gives you those little snippets, and you can build pictures of these people. You can see that sales girl guy in the suit on the bus, you can see that dancer putting her feet behind her ears and stuff, those little insignificant parts.
Yeah, I did think that was pretty good.
And I just like the way that the out of order bits are done, because it's numbered so you could put it in order if you wanted to. I like the way it alternates between the year of the war and the year after, so it's like you have this bit of the war and then you have Harry traveling the world.
I could appreciate the structure more on the second read through.
I loved the structure in the author's notes. She warns that it has a non-linear narrative structure.
Okay, I have something that I should really say. At the beginning, I didn't really understand that the author had taken a Tarantino route, even though there's a big warning right there. Maybe I should read the author's notes. I seriously did not enjoy the post-Half-Blood Prince characterization of Snape, because everybody knows that Snape is my favorite character, but to look at him after Deathly Hallows versus before, the cowardly guy who messed over everybody, stabbed everybody in the back, versus is the hero of the light and did all these wonderful things despite what his motivations were, it's hard for me to go back from that to the one before and to sort of say, you know, hey, he was a bad guy, he was cowardly, blah, 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 which post Half-Blood Prince, that's what we thought. Maybe that's my own failures as a reader, but me personally, I didn't enjoy it, the characterization of Snape, that is.
I didn't think Snape was evil in this fic. I thought he was good.
But when he gets to the grave, did you not like that?
The coward thing? I didn't like that.
No, not the coward thing. What Harry says at the gravesite.
Oh, I'll read it. You saved my life heaps of times. You tried to save my parents, even though my dad was a bully and my mom was a mudblood. You didn't kill Neville, even when you had a chance. So I think Snape is good in this fic.
And Neville had been there, and Harry was being there, and they left some really important stuff there. Like, they really respected him and stuff. I thought that it was the same sort of characterization as we eventually got in Deathly Hallows.
What I thought said a lot, he walked respectfully away until he was gone, far away before he actually popped away.
This is like the last thing he did before he went on his trip.
See, I read it out of order. I didn't even do that. Well, I didn't realize it was out of order. I just thought it was all jumbly.
Can I say the part that made me cry the first time I read it? It's the part when Ron has arrived at the Dursleys.
Oh!
And okay, he sees the cupboard under the stairs, and he's trying to make a joke.
Yeah. I liked the understated way that it was done. Mm-hmm. It was natural for Ron to go to that cupboard and go, oh man, if this was in a wizarding house, it'd have a ghoul in it, but now he's just being curious and opens it. He didn't then go and blast the Dursleys, because I've seen that written so many times that they go, oh, what's here? And it's really unnatural and forced when Ron and Hermione discover this space, and then they get all indignant about it. And I've just found a lot more natural way for it to be discovered. I found that really well written.
They go to see Xenophilius, and first he tells them, oh, the Quibbler's really not stupid articles, it's just hidden messages. I'm completely in the whole Lovegood feeling, and then all of a sudden I start to get nervous.
Yeah.
Because I'm like,
I saw this house from the outside. It didn't have a cellar.
I thought he was a bad man.
Me too.
Yeah, and I really started to freak out for them. And everything that we know about the Lovegoods, everything's pretty disorderly. But yet, they go down this passageway, and they're kind of flipping out. And there are all those books.
Such a great Hermione moment.
And I could just feel Hermione walking down that hall and thinking, my books are gone. My books are gone. And they were library books. I stole all of those library books. For what? I can see her thinking, I'm going to rot in Azkaban for stealing library books, and they're gone. Because I trusted him to Luna's dad. And then she's just like, thank you. And I dug that part.
I liked it too. I thought it was a pretty good portrayal of the post-war world that you get in Hermione's letters to Harry, not knowing how the war ended, trying to show what might happen.
Another thing that I really like, which obviously gave the story its name, was just Harry's note back to Ron. The day before he left, he bought one of those maps to the homes of famous people. On the back he wrote, as you can see, Muggles really know how to have fun.
And he went to the Winchester Mystery House. I love the Winchester Mystery House. I have to tell about the Winchester Mystery House because it's so cool. It's this crazy house. There are stairs that go to nowhere, and there are doors that open into brick walls, and it's so cool.
Yeah, I've heard of it and read about it. I've not been there.
Sarah Winchester, she thought she was being haunted by everyone the guns her husband's company produced had ever killed. So she built this house to confuse the ghosts.
See, I didn't know what that was, but you know what I thought about there? It says, Harry saw no ghosts, but he was oddly reminded of Hogwarts, and he wasn't sorry to leave. And I actually found that a bit strange, because he loves Hogwarts.
I think he just wanted to get away from everything for a little while.
Hogwarts might be haunting for him. And then also Hermione's note saying that it was going to take 2 years for Hogwarts to reopen, that told me that obviously there was a lot of damage at
the
school.
Yeah, that's true.
The setting representations were really good.
Tessa, what did you think of Australia in it?
It starts off in Sydney, and I have to say, I rolled my eyes. I'm like, why does everyone start off in Sydney? And I did the same thing in my fic. I thought it was curious that the streets were too narrow, because the streets in Sydney aren't that narrow. Generally speaking, Sydney has fairly wide streets. But, you know, everyone eventually goes to Queensland. That's where Australia goes to die, so... It seemed appropriate that he then went north. There's not a lot about Australia in it, really. It didn't seem very descriptive of Australia. But I did find it interesting that he arrived there in December and Ginny gets there in November. I found it interesting that he put down his roots there, obviously, because he bought the house there and he stayed there for like a year, whereas everywhere else had only been he'd moved
a
on
couple
fairly,
of months.
Fairly quickly. And I thought it was interesting, why did he choose there? Why did he go to Australia?
Well, it did say that he fulfilled his private lifelong dream of buying a house on the beach. You know, maybe he just, you know, wanted to live a simple life. Sun, sand. If I could hang out on a veranda with a cocktail.
I wouldn't do it in Queensland, though. It's a shocking place.
I thought it was like a desert because Ginny flew over the desert.
There's a big desert in the middle of Australia. It stretches across. See, it says she caught the port key to Perth and then she flew on the broomstick. There's a massive desert across Western Australia and it stretches into the Simpson Desert, and that's the one that goes across the top of South Australia, which is where I live. It also goes across where Uluru is and across the bottom of the Northern Territory and into Queensland. It's an absolutely huge desert. The Simpson Desert is so huge, it actually is very different. There are salt pans. There are lots of different habitats and landscapes in the Simpson Desert. It is that huge. It would take, in a car, probably to get from Perth to Brisbane driving across that desert, it would take probably nearly a week to get across the country.
Wow.
That's how massive it is. It is that vast.
Poor Ginny.
It's huge. So, and yeah, the fact that she flew across there on a broomstick in November is pretty impressive.
Well, she was nearly dead when she
got there. Believable. Totally.
Well, it says her face is raw.
Yeah, she's sunburnt. That would also be entirely possible. Get caught out in the sun in Australia, it's pretty harsh. Across that desert, it would have been that time of year. Yeah, she would be very burnt. So that was all. It was quite believable, all those little things, just like the rest of it. Yeah, I give it a thumbs up.
I like the bit where he says, my cousin got a scholarship to a boarding school in Tasmania. Reckon that's your mumbo jumbo, people. He says, maybe. Is your cousin smart? Thick as two planks. Then it's probably my mumbo jumbo, people.
If I was going to put a school in the Wizarding World in Australia, I would not put it in Tasmania.
I was always afraid of the Tasmanian devil. Like the Looney Tune, like not the real animal, like the Looney Tune, I thought it would get
Don't
me.
Don't you find that great big kangaroo thumping mouse thing from Looney Tunes more frightening? I always found him more frightening than the Tasmanian devil. Tasmanian devil used to make me laugh, but that kangaroo thing just used to freak me out every time because it looked so innocent, and then bam, 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 just dumps everyone, you know, and destroys everything in its path. I showed you that cartoon, Keza, says Mike. It's not spelt with a Z. Please, people. Tasmania. A Z. It's not a Z. It's a Z. Z, Z, Z.
So anyway, why wouldn't you put a school in Tasmania?
I would not put it in Tassie because, well, I don't know. You know, probably the main reason is because I haven't been there. Aside from that, if I was going to put a magical school somewhere, I would want it to be somewhere that nobody went, that nobody can find. And if I had magic at my disposal, I would just put it in the middle of the desert because no one goes there. But it probably wouldn't be quite as practical. But no, I'd probably put it in country New South Wales, in among all the gum trees. I like gum trees. I've got a thing for them.
I always thought that America would have a bunch of schools.
Wizarding schools?
Yeah, like I always think there's one in the northeast and then maybe one in the southeast and then
I think
one
there's
in the
probably
west.
One at Salem, you know? Like, it sounds pretty cliche, mm-hmm. but I reckon there's got to be one at Salem.
You know, I've always imagined that there was one in New Orleans.
Yes! I know a New Orleans chant. I left my wife in New Orleans with 45 cents in a can of beans because I thought it was right. Right for my country. Whoopsie-doo.
Okay.
Have you not heard that?
No.
You must have heard it. It's a Civil War thing. Come on. Told you I was cultured.
Sorry.
You marched to it. Left.
I know. Left. I left my heart in San Francisco.
They fought on the other side, Keza. Well, I don't know. Richard might have been a rebel. Are you a rebel?
Well, some of my ancestors were. I mean, I could join Sons of the Confederacy.
Do you know that chant?
Okay, what was she talking about? I'd missed the
I left
of it.
My I wife in New Orleans for 45 cents in a can of beans because I thought it was right. Right for my country, whoopsie-doo.
Nope.
I can't say I've ever heard that one.
It's a march, you know, and you do left, right, and when you sing right, I left, and then you do your left foot, you know. It's for teaching kids rhythm. Well, I told you I was cultured.
You know, going back to the fic for a second.
Yes, that's a good idea.
You know, after we're talking about in section 12 where he gets to Australia and he's talking to his roommates about the boarding school in Tasmania. They ask what happens to his cousin.
Didn't they say, reckon you ought to be nice to him? I had a cousin once. Yeah.
I like the way it ended with Harry and Ginny, that they pretty much sent each other small notes back and forth all the way through it, and they didn't really have a whole lot of expectations about each other, and I'm glad that we didn't really have to know what made them decide that they were going to go find themselves for a while, but I just really like that he tells her that he'd like her to stick around, and she says that she'd like that.
I like the last line.
I even like that, because I think I like Harry, Ginny in this fic, because I like the Ginny in this fic. I think she's really independent, and then she went off to be a freelance illegal curse breaker.
Yeah.
I liked that.
I've pretty much decided that in all of the fics that I think are worth anything as far as Harry Ginny fics go, I'm not going to like it unless Ginny is a very strong-willed, independent person.
That's funny. I think that too, and I've only ever liked
one. If she's portrayed as a simpering, fangirlish hanger-on, like some ornament for him, I click off. It doesn't do anything for me, and I won't read it.
Good call.
And the same goes, I won't read badly portrayed Harry either.
What's badly portrayed Harry?
Well, I mean, I don't like it when people write him and make him a prick.
Or when he's too together, you know what I mean? Like when he's too slick.
Too suave, too sophisticated.
Yeah, he has to make mistakes and still be a little bit...
He has to be a little bit emotionally clueless. He has to be a little bit backwards because he just...
I think if he does anything smooth, it has to be completely unconscious and not even realizes that he does it. The whole planning Harry really gets to me. Harry doesn't plan anything in canon. Hermione plans everything, and Harry goes along with it. No, the planning Harry doesn't do it for me. The smooth Harry doesn't do it for me unless it's something completely off the cuff and he doesn't realize he's doing it.
Yeah, I don't like reading leadership Harry.
Yeah, because I think when he was the leader in the DA, it was an accident because he thought Hermione was the leader, remember?
I mean yeah. He obviously was...
That's what I mean.
Hermione he was good with the spells, and people obviously were going to trust him, and they were going to look to him for leadership. He didn't do that on purpose. But you read so many of these stories where Harry has got it all together, and everyone is like little disciples, like little Harry disciples, and they all follow him around.
And he plans to do it. He plans to say, right, I'm going to get them to do this, and all that sort of stuff, and it's just
and
not
I'm
going to
go off and save the world. Pretty much has it all together, and I am leader Harry, you know. It's a little too Christ-like for me. You know, Harry, you know, I don't like that parallel, mm-hmm. because he's Harry. He's just a boy. Yeah, yeah. He's just a boy, you know, with too much responsibility on his shoulders. You know, he didn't ask for any of this stuff. He's not really supposed to be the savior of the world, so I don't like it when people portray him or write him like that he is.
It's like stepping into that
role
naturally.
He went into it kicking and screaming. He didn't hold up the badge and pin it to his robe like Percy did and say, look, save ya.
Oh, Richard's still here.
He is, isn't he?
Hello.
We'd wondered where you'd gone.
I'm here. I'm just listening.
Anything else to say?
Well, he gets it now because he knows what order it goes in.
I'll have to read it again, I think.
He just is really quiet because he doesn't want to admit that he wasn't real crazy about the story.
I'm just looking forward to maybe having a fic soonish that's not Harry and Jenny.
You have a pic coming up?
I can't believe I just said that. My pic is the next pic is a HG fic. But it's not a HG-centric fic. It's just, it's called Minding the Baby.
It's about Teddy.
The focus is not on Harry and Jenny's relationship. It's on other things.
Oh, no,
no, we're not you're writing, someone take away his notepad.
He thinks that just because it's about a baby.
Aww. No. Fine.
You'll be surprised to know that there are other ways of making children than two guys.
Really, I hadn't noticed.
Oh, gosh.
Mike, it's just about a baby. Just because it's about a baby doesn't mean...
Let's just take away his paper. Let's just wrap the fic up.
Say goodnight, Mike.
Yeah.
Mike says goodnight. He has written it in big, bold letters.
Mike actually says night with three exclamation marks.
He's nodding his head enthusiastically. He bows to Pufwa.
So weird.
Hey, he's bowing. What more could they ask for?
I'm going to curtsy.
Okay.
I thought it was a really good fic, P.S. I enjoyed it.
I love it. It's wonderful.
Once I worked out the
order. It's definitely one of my all-time favorites.
It's worth a bookmark.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah.
Yay.
I'm so glad you liked the fic that I picked.
I did like it. And I'm looking forward to liking Richard's next week.
Yay! My next pick, just after this one, is going to be really just weird.
Okay.
You mess with me.
We like experimenting.
You pick whatever you want.
I'm going to stick it really to the HG people and for you guys for making me read that crap all the time.
Hey, don't include me with them.
Did you pick PS?
And
oh,
you
wait,
were
you
telling
did.
Me the other day, you pick what you like. If you like it, we'll do it. That's
I know, I'm just
said.
Teasing. Gosh.
That's the only one I liked. At least it wasn't fluff and...
She's dissing my fluff.
And weddings. There
I'm
were
gonna
see, there
cry
weren't
now.
Weddings. There weren't any weddings. No weddings.
I'm gonna cry
no
now.
Babies. No sex. That was kind of in the wrong order. I guess babies come after sex.
Wait, they do?
Not if it's in
Let me clarify then. Babies come only after certain kinds of sex.
Or the interaction of certain organism cells. Because you can interact them anywhere. I was talking about test tubes and petri dishes. Goodness me, you people have filthy.
Kez teaches biology next on Peoncast.
Oh, man, I am so excited. I may vomit.
We should say goodnight.
Yep.
This has been Peoncast. It was Maps to the Stars Homes by Liz B. Next week, we're doing Minding the Baby by Kay Schneier. So join us next week for that fic, and hopefully Mike will have freed himself from our high-up job by then.
Goodnight.
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 Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
And now, a word from our peons.
Why am I last?
Because you're the last one to answer the phone. Regardless of your reasons, you're the last one. Next time, get a Bluetooth headset.
Oh my goodness, I thought PS was the one with grumpy pants on.
No kidding.
You're wearing the biggest grumpy pants of all.
What's up your nose?
Well, I taught Richard about astrology today.
All right.
Oh my god, I have an astrology story. Yesterday, when I bought my new mic, my horoscope said, you will make a new purchase that will benefit your family.
Oh.
And you all are my family, and I made a new purchase that would benefit it, and you can hear me. I sound like a real person.
Awesome.
You're so sweet.
That's like astrology in real life.
No, but Richard learned that he was a Capricorn.
Didn't you know we're Capricorns, Richard?
I already knew I was a Capricorn. I just didn't know any significance to anything else.
Oh, that you actually behave like one.
So what purchases did you guys make yesterday? Because I'm a Capricorn.
I went to the supermarket and I bought junk food and I have given it to my children so that they will be quiet while I record.
And that's benefiting the family.
Astrology's true.
Richard, what about you?
Yesterday, I don't know. I think I bought like a box of blueberry Pop-Tarts.
How does that benefit the family?
Because blueberry Pop-Tarts are awesome.
Yeah.
I like the ice cream sundae Pop-Tarts.
That's just disgusting, P.S.
They're good.
I can only get, I don't even know if I can get Pop-Tarts anymore. And you could get strawberry ones. I don't think you can get them anymore.
You can't get the cherry ones?
No, never got cherry ones.
Ooh, cherry and brown sugar cinnamon. Mmm, my favorite.
Yeah, I'm making me hungry.
I'm sorry.
See, this is how it benefits the family because now everybody knows Keza has no Pop-Tarts. And then the next time they send her a box, they'll send her Pop-Tarts. Astrology is real.
I don't know if Pop-Tarts will make it through customs.
Why not?
Oh.
That was a joke.
Oh.
That's like- all right. I'll just stay here and hug my mat because all my food is gone. No, I still have ranch dressing left.
You better have ranch dressing.
I still have ranch dressing, big red, and choc chips left.
Are we finally ready to go?
Yep, start it.
Okay.
Richard, go.
I'm trying. See, now you can't just crack the whip like that after you get the bang. No grumbling. I refuse to acquiesce. Okay.
Go eat a Pop-Tart made of chia.
Put some butter on it. Leave me alone.
You did it. You just grumbled.
I just giggled. It's a difference.
I thought men didn't giggle.
It's
you're
actually,
gonna squee next.
There, you did it.
Now I'm about to grumble.
You did it. We made you do it. All right. Okay, start.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to PeonCast. I am Richard 1.
I'm Dim 2.
I'm Keza.
P.S.
Okay, Captain. Capitan.
Yes, and we are discussing this week Minding the Baby by Kay Schneier. The first thing that I particularly liked, and this is, I don't know if anybody else noted it, but Andromeda was talking when she had Kingsley leave her place at the very beginning. Wow. Normally, for one death, they send an Or. For two deaths, they send a department head. For three, they send the Minister of Magic. For a while, she sort of almost forgot about Ted while she was thinking about Tonks. I don't know. It kind of struck me. Like, could somebody be so grief-stricken over some people, but sort of just put to the back of their mind somebody else, like their husband?
Well, but Ted had been gone for a while, but he had gone into hiding, and so I think that it's easy to live in denial of something like that.
Because Ted was a few weeks prior to this, and if your child had just died, and you'd just been told by the minister.
I can sort of understand how that would, yeah. She's had time to deal with Ted.
Yeah, I think timing would have a lot to do with it.
I think it was the timing and the fact that Ted was gone in hiding, and so I think that it's easy to not have as much closure or have it be as final for her. For her to think.
Yeah, like he's still in hiding. She still sort of subconsciously thinks he's still on the run.
That she's living in denial of it, and that's why she immediately wished that he was there to comfort her, because I think that she was kind of just living that not accepting idea of he was just off somewhere. He wasn't gone. It was easier to accept that way.
Mm-hmm. This first whole section is incredibly sad to me, because right after that part, she talks about when she was biting down on her hand or whatever, she was trying to use it to make herself forget and concentrate on the pain. She thought about Remus and how he would bite and gnaw on himself and asked if chewed on himself to help him forget, or because, you know, it wasn't helping her because it was still, it just made it worse. So all I can say is this poor Andromeda, because this is just awful. I would be in a very miserable point right now if I was in her place.
Yeah. Because then right after that, she wonders how long he would cry. She did nothing at all and wonders how long it would take them to find her and find him if she set out to join Ted. So that's pretty much big feelings that she's got there, but I don't think you can fault her for them.
She can't ignore Teddy. I don't think she seriously thinks about doing herself in. One of the things, I think the themes that's through the books is the love that mothers show. If you look at the main characters, Harry, well, I think we all know what Lily did. And then you look at his foil, which is Malfoy, and what his mother ultimately does for him. And then Harry's love interest is Ginny, and what Molly does, for Ginny, obviously that really stands out, but she does do it for all her kids. And I think that there's a real statement in there about mothers. When I finished reading Deathly Hallows, that's what I that's the first theme that I really, really picked out, that the way that mothers love their kids. Then she goes to Teddy and says, "She's gone. I'm sorry. I should have stopped her. I'm so sorry." That really got me, because she's apologizing to the baby because she didn't stop Thomas from going.
That was
so
awful.
She's got so many emotions. Like, she's feeling the murderer's sister. She wants to give her a piece of her mind. She wants to forget. She wants to remember. She wants to die herself. She knows she can't ignore Teddy. She feels guilty for letting Tonks go. You know, there's so many emotions in that. Like, one quite short piece.
Yeah.
The thing that got me was where she thinks that Harry wants to take Teddy away from her.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not particularly emotionally invested in Andromeda, but that really got to me, because this is the only thing that she has left of her daughter. This is the only thing she has left of her husband, in a way. You know, I mean, this is the only family member she has left, and this kid who's not even related to her and who is actually connected by her son-in-law wants to take the baby away from her, and it just...
Well, I don't know that he really wanted to take the baby. I think he just...
But it's just like this gut reaction that she has when she thinks
She
had a little knee jerk.
Right.
I don't think Harry realized that when he said that, how it would come across to her. His words are, he's talking just, about Sirius offered to let him live. I'm more than happy to make the same offer to Teddy, because he's just thinking, that's the only example he has of being a godfather. That's the only thing Sirius could really ever do for him. So, you know, he's trying to be a godfather without a real role model of one. Right. And I don't think, realize the impact that it has on Andromeda. But I think that's a perfectly normal gut reaction for her to have.
Which also says something profoundly sad about Harry, too, because he has just such little concept about families and how they work that he didn't realize that this might happen. It might affect her like that.
Yeah, that's very true, too.
Yeah. Like, he just doesn't realize that. Because for Harry, who's never had, I mean, he's never really lived with family. You can't count the Dursleys. So he probably wouldn't get that link straight away.
Yeah.
I think he would understand it eventually, because he was just probably, I mean, he would have been grieving and stuff as well.
What did you guys think about the first appearance of the Malfoys?
Whoa. I couldn't believe that they had the audacity to show up.
My favorite part was when Andromeda said to Narcissa, she said, "I had a sister that looked like you, but she was about 25 years younger. She might have died." And I was just like, wow.
That's what one of us did anyway.
I just sort of...
Least of all, Lucius.
Well, then that, and then Narcissa actually going up to her and moaning about Bella being dead.
Hey, can I clarify something that's in my brain? Bellatrix killed Tonks, didn't she?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
And, yeah.
I was looking at it because Sissy says Bella's dead, and Andromeda says yes, snarls Andromeda, and about an hour too late for Dora. When I read that, I went, oh, hang on, Bellatrix killed Tonks, didn't she? And that just makes it even worse for me, because...
How could she go up to her and go, Bella's dead,
dead. So, to be fair,
Dora. I have to assume she didn't know.
To be fair, you guys have to remember, she didn't come up and just say Bella's dead straight away. She went to try to say something to Andromeda, but then Andromeda said something about, well, you know, I had a sister like you, but she's probably dead. Then when she says that, she says, well, Bella's dead. And I mean, it's not like, I don't think she was going to try to get sympathy.
I know, but just the fact that she even mentioned her name at the funeral.
Because wasn't it Tonks' funeral?
Mm-hmm. Well, and then Narcissa has the gall to say, "I almost lost my husband and my son. I can only imagine what this must be like."
God, I hate her. Ugh. I hate all of them.
Come on, Narcissa isn't that...
But she's got no social tact here. You have to admit she's got no social tact here whatsoever.
Well, I mean, and then she also says it was almost me instead of you.
You don't say that to people.
Not when they've just lost their husband, their daughter, their son-in-law.
I think you guys are being unfair. I don't think it was, wow, thank God that happened to you and not me. That's not really what she's going for here.
Well, no, I don't think that that's what she's saying. Just the fact that she acknowledged
it. They are sisters, after all. It's not like they're enemies. Not really.
But they were. They were on opposite sides.
They've been on opposite sides of the war for years, and Narcissa had written her off.
They're still family.
Yeah.
But it doesn't... But Sissy didn't care until everyone died. She didn't come crawling back to apologize until they were all gone, and she didn't care until
her family almost died.
I think she's just stupid.
Narcissa was not a participant in the war.
No, but just the fact that Lucius was a Death Eater and Bella was a Death Eater, and they're both so heavily involved in the war, and then Narcissa has the gall to show up at her daughter's daughter's funeral after Bella has annihilated her.
I think that you are just dead set on hating Narcissa in this fic. That's what I think.
I actually don't hate Narcissa. I think she's made a real social gaffe, worse than Harry's, I tell you, because she should know better. She's been raised properly, and she's, you know, like a pure blood with all the
Tessa's right. Benefits. She's been raised in this, like, one of his families.
Nice manners
You've
and
got
stuff.
Got all the little forks and stuff, so I would kind of assume she'd know not to do that.
And no, I don't really hate Narcissa. I pity Narcissa.
She's a real tragic figure.
She's just made the biggest lapse of propriety that I can possibly think of. I'm just not sure that showing up at Tonks and Ramus's funeral was the best place for her to try to initiate a reconciliation.
I think she went there to try to reconcile, but not to grieve so much as to be there for her sister, which is what she was trying
to do. I'll give her points for that, for showing up to acknowledge.
She would have been better off to stand in the back row, made sure that her sister saw her, and then quietly.
Because she says, I wanted to remind you that you still have family if you'll have us, please. And I think that is an admirable sentiment, absolutely, because they need to heal these gaps that have been caused through, you know, years and years and years. They need to heal that, but at the funeral?
Not with the circumstances
Not if Bellatrix has just killed Tonks.
Oh, and Ted had been hunted down.
I actually do have a respect for Narcissa. I didn't understand it in book 6 because I didn't know whether she was a Death Eater and what vow she was making, but when I understood at the end of book 7 that she'd been protecting Draco and combined with all her actions there, she's actually one of those quite strong mother figures in the series.
That's true. I mean, she has to be a strong woman in order to live in that house. She just, it wasn't a good decision
not in
that she did.
Not in this story.
I will concur that point. That way we won't spend another hour.
Can we talk about how cute some of the baby stuff is? I just love the little the little touches. Like, as a witch, she has a different apron than most mothers. Do you see? It says, a witch's mother's apron that has a pocket for her wand well out of the baby's reach. Like, that's just a really nice touch that he puts in there to show that it's a magical world. And I love it when the authors take the time to remind you that these aren't just muggles.
I just thought the whole concept of Harry in the witch's mother's apron was
oh, dear.
And then Harry blowing on the baby belly. And then Harry and Jenny together. And they're like, oh, he did the nose this time. You know, and then they start
talking. The metamorphosis. Whatever it is. The thing that Teddy and Tonks are that makes them do the
Metamorph Magus, I think it is.
Thank
Metamorph
you.
Metamorph Magus.
Yeah.
Was really cute. Just like where Andromeda explains the theory of it to Harry. Like,
I like the one where she said that Tonks spent a whole afternoon
looking trying like to match the couch.
Yeah. I spent an afternoon doing my best not to notice that Dora was stomping around the house with skin that matched the hound's tooth pattern on the sofa.
Descriptions like that make me wish that magic like that existed, because that'd be something to see.
It would.
Just imagine look over at somebody and they have some sort of like that or some other crazy metamorph thing going on. Pig nose or I don't know, whatever. I had a favorite part right after that. Andromeda's talking to Harry and Jenny and says that, you know, I'm really going to miss you when you go back to Hogwarts. And Harry's like, well, you're not going to miss me much because I'm going to be able to leave 2-3 times a week. Favorite from McGonagall. And she's like, wow, you know, she doesn't have to do that. I forget what he says. Something about a couple of deaths happening and then about...
My parents, we're both heroes
his
of
parents
war.
To his parents.
You know, yeah, that's right. And he said, you know, had helped him out of a tight spot a time or two, and that, you know, he was calling in some of those favors that he was owed. And I just...
Ginny finishes for him wearing a mischievous grin. Certain allowances are made for Harry. He's done the nation a small service or two recently. Yeah, just a small
one. Well, and then what I thought was, oh, certain allowances are made for Harry, and she says, but then she begins to reevaluate her earlier assessment of Molly Weasley's wishes. Then she sees them preening like unicorns. She knows that although they're incredibly in love, she doesn't think that they're actually going against Jenny's parents' wishes by doing the deed in her home.
She thinks she can smell it. I would like to know how you can smell that.
And then Jenny says that, and then she's like, oh, maybe I should reevaluate. And that just kind of cracked me up, because she's like, well...
Certain allowances are made for Harry.
He does get what he wants.
Certain allowances, indeed. And I like the way it doesn't actually answer the question. You can decide for yourself whether or not allowances are being made for Harry.
Now,
and like I said, Harry and Jenny could be going at it in the parlor sofa, and Molly would say, oh, thank you, dear, for doing my daughter. Let me go make you a treat.
You know, for some reason, I have mild doubts that Molly Weasley would say that, but Hey, maybe...
I'm not sure she'd be that dumb. Although, do you remember that, like a shameless plug here, there's a line in my fic that Harry's all embarrassed and he thinks George is going to talk to him about him and Ginny, you know, doing the deed. And George says something like, you could shag Ginny sideways right now, no one would care.
And then, that's what I'm talking about.
My favorite part of this whole entire fic is the part when Draco comes and she comes and is like, okay, give me your wand. And he finally comes in and she's like, well, what do you want? And he's like, I've come to babysit the cub. And to me, I don't know, I wouldn't say I was annoyed or angry or anything like that. It was just, I can't really express myself how I thought. I just thought that was a really great line.
Oh, that was weird.
Because that's what Voldemort said to him. If you remember in Deathly Hallows, in the first chapter, when Draco and everybody's in the room, Snape and everybody's in there, and he says, so Draco, are you going to be babysitting the cub anytime soon?
Okay, I get it now. It's good. Now I think it's good. At first,
I don't remember that bit. Is that in Deathly Hallows? Tell me where.
Yes, it is in the very first.
Yes, it is.
I need to reread that.
I'll go get mine right now.
Read it to me.
I like it. I like that line now.
I just didn't get it. I just thought Draco was being an idiot.
Okay, I'm back. What say you, Draco? Will you babysit the cubs? So that's what he said to him when he found out that they had gotten married.
You know what I actually really liked? We touched on it a bit earlier. When I first read this fic, the description of them preening like a pair of unicorns, it just really put a picture in my head. I could see them sitting on the sofa and just, you know, not able to keep their hands off each other.
Yeah, and the whole bit about Andromeda noticing and they're both recognizing between themselves that they think the other is going to be a good mother or a good father and how charged it is between them. And she's like, oh, there's going to be a wedding there.
I don't think that's kind of charge, exactly.
Talking more like electrical, sexual energy charged.
I don't think the books really acknowledge that any of them have hormones except for that silly beast in Harry's chest, quite frankly. There is no acknowledgement of any hormones apart from that. The fluttering in his stomach when he first sees Cho.
And when that steamy kiss, or however you want to describe the...
You mean page 116?
Yeah.
You know which page it's on? It's not on page 16 in my book.
No, 116.
What's on page 116 in my book. Is that what we're talking about? Page 116 of Deathly Hallows?
Well, it's the American version.
I have the British version. Wear what you like and I'll put a full body bind curse on Mum until it's all over. She wasn't too bad this morning considering, said George. Cried a bit about Percy not being here, but who wants him? Oh, blimey, brace yourselves. Here they come. Look, brightly coloured figures were appearing one by one out of nowhere at the distant boundary of the yard. What page is it on? Now, before we finish, I have to tell you what page. It's at Harry's birthday, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That's
before the wedding.
Before the wedding, after the ghoul.
How did your...
Page 99. There's the silver lining I've been looking for. There you go.
I hate Harry Kenny. Jesus Christ.
Oh. I'm with you, Richard. I'm with you. Don't forget
She whispered,
about me.
And then gonna... she was kissing him as she had never kissed him before, and Harry was kissing her back, and it was blissful oblivion, better than fire whiskey. She was the only real thing in the world.
I'm not listening.
Ginny, the feel of her, one hand at her back, and one of her long, sweet, smelling hair. The door bang opened, and Richard and P.S. crashed the party.
That would have went on much further. I would have burned the party down. Been outside.
Richard burned the burrow down.
And yet, for your fluff romance, you chose a Harry Ginny where they nuzzle each other like a pair of unicorns.
Hang on. Stop. Okay, first of all, Harry Ginny is not a focal point of this story. This story is about Andromeda and Teddy.
Only that it's archived on a Harry Ginny site.
Yeah, why were you looking at sink into your eyes to find your fan fiction pics?
Well, that's where I get most of my one-shots from, and that's where my own fics are posted at. So.
Mm-hmm. Are they?
I know that's kind of ironical.
What's your name on there?
Same thing as it is on Puffwa.
Three stories on Sink Into Your Eyes, a Harry Ginny fanfiction archive.
Imagine that.
His author name is Lonely Riddle, and he has three one-shots on there. And if he tries to tell you he doesn't like Harry Ginny, he must be lying.
Do you know what's not archived on Sink Into Your Eyes, a Harry Ginny fanfiction archive?
Or a Slughorn in the Cauldron of Secrets.
Exactly. And that's what we're doing next week.
We're introducing next week's story.
So that people can read it.
By our very own P.S.
Yay!
Woohoo!
Richard should extend final thoughts about
this. I have no final thoughts.
I thought it was great, even if it did have Harry, Ginny in it and characters that I'm not particularly interested in. I still thought it was great.
I, of course, because it was Harry and Ginny, I loved it.
I liked actually exploring Andromeda in it. One of the things I took away from Death Alex in the whole series was this idea of mothers, and she's just another mother.
And I was personally just really into finding out that Teddy Lupin was going to have a solid way to be taken care of instead of some shoddy way like Harry was. So that's what
So I guess that's it for Minding the Baby by Kay Schneier.
We'll see you all next week.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Bye.
Goodbye, everybody.
Peanut sat on a railway track. Its heart was all a flutter. Train came rolling down the track. Toot toot, peanut butter. Toot toot.
And now a word from our peons.
I don't know if I even want to tell this story. This is the most embarrassing thing that ever happened to me. Nobody is going to let me live this down, especially Ryan.
Fill it.
I had the worst week of my life last week, so I decided I'll go home this weekend. On my way back, there's all this construction in Pennsylvania. I don't know what happened. I kept going on, I think it was 81, and then all of a sudden, I'm like, this doesn't seem familiar. I look at the map. I have the GPS thing. Nobody's going to let me live this down because I managed to get lost with GPS, but the next biggest city is Montreal.
So Montreal?
What? So I, like, went all the way up New York without even realizing it.
You were in my neighborhood.
Isn't that, like, several hours?
Yes. It is.
I've got my map out.
Oh, goodness.
You're in Pennsylvania. Yeah, 81 goes to Montreal.
After bone up on your French.
So you're in Pennsylvania, like near where Mac lives.
I don't know where I am.
And you got on 81, which goes through New York.
Right by me.
I almost visited Mike by accident. I probably almost visited Mac by accident, too.
Mike is not on my map.
I'm from New York City, but currently I'm upstate.
He's on Florida.
What?
What?
Not supposed to be on Florida.
What? Where do I put Mike?
What do you mean I'm on Florida?
He wasn't on Florida when I sent him to you.
Well, somebody
moved. Are we talking about me or are we talking about a different Mike here?
No, I'm talking about you. Mike. Your green arrow. Where do you live?
What green arrow?
there are no more Mikes.
He doesn't know anything about the map. I've got a Marauder's map of Pourfoy. And everyone's on it. The only person in New York is Wayne.
Wait a minute, how could Mike not know about the map?
I don't know
about
he doesn't pay attention to anything. Someone put me in
Florida. Are you in the city of New York or the state of New York?
Currently I'm in upstate New York.
So I'm going to stick you at Watertown just because you won't tell me exactly where you
Rochester.
Are.
Rochester. Oh, Rochester. Rochester.
Yeah, I went by Rochester.
Oh.
It's for Rochester.
Rochester. You're near Lake Ontario.
Put my dad in New York City, please.
I don't know where New York City is, man. I'm Australian.
It's on the coast.
It's on the coast, Kevin.
Oh,
yeah, but so is Rochester.
Oh, put me in New York City, please.
I'm trying. It is. Is it near New Jersey?
Yeah.
It's the very
Oh,
of
there
York.
It is. It's a big fat thing and it's got... it's got a big fat word that says New York under Danielle. I just moved Danielle. And, oh, Long Island. I know. I've heard of that place.
But I'm not there. Long Island. I'm New York City.
No, I've put you sticking you to the big fat New York. Very good. Now that we've updated the map.
What is this map exactly? I never heard of this thing.
Gee whiz. All right, let me find you the thread. Don't you know about my map? So far behind the times.
For the love of Merlin and all that's good, you are headway.
What forum?
Get
is
it together, man.
I only read like 10 forums.
I had a parcel, and I went on the podcast, and I went, I've got a map! Remember that?
Wait, when you had a what?
I've got a map.
Oh, my God.
Forget it.
See, you know why I never saw this? Because I don't go into Muggle London. I'm not a Muggle. I'm a witch.
Mike is a witch.
No wonder he doesn't understand impreg.
I'm a witch. You people are all confusing me. Anyway, I don't visit Muggle London because I'm a wizard.
You're still supposed to be the head boy.
Not of a Muggle London school, though.
I'm going to have to second guess your appointment. I'm telling you.
Mike?
Yeah.
You know those little thingies at the top of the page that say your last post?
No.
Show unread posts?
Where is that? Huh?
Oh.
Dear.
Wait, what is this? You mean like every post you haven't read? Page,
it says, when you go to the forum, at the very top, there are two links.
It says, show unread posts, please visit, or show new replies to your posts.
Yeah. Where? I never just go to the forum and just start randomly clicking places.
How else can you do it?
Have you been to Puffle before?
Put the link in the chat. You click on
it. Yeah, I go into the actual forums. I don't go into these weird secret show post places. I go into real forums, not like hidden threads or whatever.
That's okay.
I read the staff rooms. I read the Slytherin rooms. I read the Quidditch pitch. I read the recommendation one. I read like 8 or 10 of them. I figure that's enough. You guys all read every single post that comes onto this forum, without exception. You can't tell me that.
I do.
Well, I read a lot.
I'm not sure if I can deal with this head boyishness right now. I'm about to, like, slit my own throat. Either that or I'm about to go get a dull spoon from my kitchen and, like, gouge out my own intestines.
Every time I talk to Jen, I get the feeling she wants to, like, stab me with a butter knife.
So perceptive.
I don't really want to stab you with a butter knife. I just need to understand.
Like, every time she helps me with something, I get this idea like she's supposed to like reach through and strangle me. But that's all right, and that's why I like you.
I do love you, kind of like, you know, furry puppies. And
sometimes you have to drown those little puppies, though.
Cute ducks.
You're awful!
Back to episode 10 of PeonCast. Today we are doing a fic by Plaid Slytherin, or PS, called Horace Slughorn and the Cauldron of Secrets. And we have a surprise guest tonight, too. I'm one of your hosts, Michael.
I'm Keza.
And I'm Richard One.
And I'm PS, and I guess surprise! I'm a surprise guest, even though I'm not really a surprise.
I'm surprised that you're here.
What do you guys all think of this fic? Let's go around and get...
Since I'm the first, I'm going to go first. Well, I thought the fic was actually remarkably good considering the subject matter. Hold on. Don't scoff. I am not one for flashy fics, but I was remarkably... I liked it at the end. I enjoyed the story. It had I don't know how to pronounce the other guy's name.
Oh my god, me neither. Can we have a quick French lesson?
I like to say Leonide because it sounds like a poison and that's just cool, but...
I was saying Leonid. Can we say Leonida. It my way because I wrote it?
No. What makes you think the author gets to make these choices?
Me? We need Amelia. We need Amelia to send us a sound file. Send a voicemail, Amelia. Tu peux voir? There's no A in it. Leonida, Richard, that's wrong, but... Right.
That's how you pronounce French words. Leonida.
I think she told me how to pronounce it, and I think I said it. I think I'm saying it the way she told me to.
Well, you know, because Amelia should send a voicemail to Puffa for us.
Yes.
So, and tell anyway, us and confirm, point. And confirm, okay?
That Amelia? I've been saying it right.
What I liked about it anyway was I like how P.S. kind of cleverly, like, obviously this fix not only takes place, I don't know, how many years in the past, P.S.? 50 or 60?
It is 1924.
Wow, horse is old.
So, you know, it takes place 7 years in the past, so obviously this is, you know, pre-Tom Riddle, pre-Grindelwald, everything we know. But yet, at the same time, P.S. still incorporates canon into it. There's these little things, like, I look right at the beginning, where it's talking about how unlucky he is. And I think P.S. can tell me if I'm wrong here, but immediately what pops into my mind with this story is that, I wonder if this is the time where he takes, when he refers in book 6 to himself taking Felix
Felicis.
That's what immediately pops into my mind, anyway.
Yeah. That's kind of the point of the story.
You know, like, it's not, even though it's 70 years in the past, it's still referring back to the books we know.
But he said he took it
right,
twice.
Once when he was, I can't
once
remember.
Once when he was 24, and once when he was 57. That's what I was trying to do. Because when you write past fic, I kind of figure if you refer back to the canon, it's just make people go, oh, you know, see a connection there, and it just becomes...
I really like it in stories when that happens, because I was going to say that the bit I liked was when he's got that bottle of the Felix. And I like it. He had ordered it from Hector Dagworth Granger, who owed him a favor. And that line is so cool because, I mean, it's got the word Granger in it, and it's like, oh, is that one of Hermione's ancestors? who owed him a favor.
Oh, that's the grandeur he refers to.
He's really in character. And it talks about that it's the Felix potion. And so that's like that stuff from Half-Blood Prince. So I think that is just so cleverly crafted and really well thought out. And I couldn't do that. I take my hat off to PS.
So obviously, I think as everyone probably who listens to this podcast knows, you're obsessed with Slughorn. You love Slughorn. He's the theme of this. You basically created the Slughorn genre, I think, right? You were pretty much like Final World Word in Slughorn. So I don't know. I was just curious if there was a story behind where your interest in Slughorn came from or why you were interested in it. Like, what is it about him that you find so fascinating that he's in all of your stories?
Well, it's one of those deals where I tend to fixate on pretty random characters, and I think this is true for lots of different things. And I can't really pinpoint why. I just thought he was really interesting. He's the type of character I tend to like, and I think I like him because a lot of people ignore him, a lot of people forget he exists. I don't like it when that happens to people, and so I really wanted to flesh him out, and I wanted to tell his story more, just because, to me, he was one of the most, I think he's the most interesting character, but I just remember reading Half-Blood Prince and thinking, well, this guy is so awesome, this guy is so interesting, the whole fandom is going to go nuts over him, there's going to be so much fic written about him, it's going to be amazing, it's going to be awesome, and then it didn't happen, and I was surprised, and I was upset, and so I decided, well, I'm just going to have to do it myself, and so that's what I've been doing. I've been single-handedly populating the fandom with Slughorn fic of dubious quality.
This is more of a general question in terms of, I guess, what's your writing process? Is there, like, a certain way you go about planning the stories? Like, where do the ideas come from, and how do you put them? Like, are you one of those people that plots it out, you know, every detail far in advance, or to just hit you like a thunderbolt one day, or I don't know?
I think definitely it depends on the story. This did hit me like a thunderbolt, and I did get it out, and I know I had some issues that I have to talk ideas out with people. I know I talked a lot of this out with Richard. I can
yay.
I tend to plot it out, and then I talk over the issues I have with people. Like, I'll be like, well, like, is this dumb? Does this make sense? And then I'll write. So, and also what happens, I'll do a lot with, like I said, like, this is kind of different because it's a one-shot, but I know there's a tendency of me to plan ahead. I will, like, write the last page first. I mean, I'll write things out of order as they hit me. Like, I'll be like, oh, I know this is an awesome scene that definitely is going to happen way in the end of the story, and I'll write it out now. And then when I get to it, maybe I won't like it anymore, but at least it's written, and I feel like I have at least accomplished something.
You know what I liked about this fic? We've been talking about romance lately on Peoncast and what it means. And I think this is quite a romantic fic. Now, I'm not the one for slash, generally speaking. It's very sort of understated, and the way he just sort of notices the little things. Violent's the wrong word. That's not the, you know, feverish. It's not rushed or feverish or anything. It's just sort of gentle and sweet. And I really liked that because, I mean, I've come across the odd slash fic, which I've usually backed away from pretty hurriedly. But see, I like Shoebox as well because it's not the main focus of the story is that they want to get each other's clothes off. And so to me, it's kind of like those sort of fics often do, I think, a disservice to the genre. Well, it's not really a genre because too many people write porn slash, and that's most of what I come across. And it seems rare to get slash fics where the feelings are really looked at. It's all about them wanting to, you know, get their hands on each other, and you only sort of see that the sort of the tender, gentle stuff in het fics. I think in some ways that mirrors the world, though. I'm going to get really deep and philosophical now. That sort of mirrors the world because people often go, you know, talk about homosexuality and they don't focus, they focus too much on the sex act rather than on the fact that the people actually love each other. And to me, whether you agree, you know, because it's still a real grey area, whether you agree that homosexuality is a good, bad, evil thing, whatever, you really have to remember that there are people behind those feelings. And I think that that's one of the things I really liked about this fic, that it's the people behind the feelings. It's not about them trying to rip each other's clothes off. So that's what I appreciated about this one.
I see, I think your Slughorn's a very real character. Like, I think, too, a lot of times in fan fiction, the characters tend to be almost too perfect, or even when they're not perfect, it's that they're not perfect in kind of like these cliche ways. I don't know if I'm explaining that well. Whereas, I don't know, your characters, maybe because you get to make them three-dimensional, they're not as three-dimensional canon. I don't know why, but they seem more human.
I enjoy making him fail. I love him, but I do so enjoy making him fail.
I think that's part of his character, isn't it? For Horace to fail. Because I think there are some people that through their own actions or whatever, failing seems to sort of follow them around. And I think that he, in some ways, he's the sort of character, he's the sort of person that doesn't really look too far ahead a lot of the time. That he's sort of, you know, he looks to other people and the reason that he hangs out with them is because of what they can do for him sort of thing. He just doesn't strike me like, in contrast, he's a contrast to Dumbledore in a lot of ways. Dumbledore really looks to see what's going to happen, tries to look at the big picture, and if he does this, what will happen here, and if he does that, you know, whether or not he gets it right is debatable, but that's his way he works. Whereas Horace Slughorn, to me, seems to be, he's like, okay, what is going to impact on me, like when he doesn't want to tell Harry about the thing, and then he adjusts his memory so that he doesn't look bad because it's going to affect him. He doesn't look at the bigger picture of why Harry might need it or what Tom Riddle may have done with that information or anything like that. Do you see what I mean?
I half agree with you.
Why only half?
I think that, well, cause I think you're right in terms that he doesn't look at the bigger picture. I don't think he's quite as selfish.
Oh, I don't think he's selfish. Make it out. Well, it's maybe not that he's agree. Selfish, like, that he's... He just doesn't see past himself, and that doesn't make people selfish.
Like, I don't think it's that he doesn't want to look bad so much as he's just panicked over it, almost. And he's not thinking the long-term consequences. I agree with you. Like, he's, you know, why does he tell Tom Riddle? Why doesn't he tell Harry?
He doesn't want Harry and Dumbledore today, to think badly of him. He doesn't want them to think that he's caused it. He realizes that he's made a mistake or that sort of thing.
He values other people's opinions of him.
Yeah, he values other people's opinions.
It's not so much... It's kind of like he is trying to seem good, but I think it's more like... He wants the people that he cares about.
He wants to make a good impression. See him good. And I don't think that makes him a bad person.
It's kind of the same, but it's kind of different at the same time.
It just means that he operates differently. It doesn't make him a bad person. It just means he operates differently to people that are looking at a bigger picture. Because, like, I compared him to Dumbledore, for example. Dumbledore,
I mean,
he makes decisions based very much on the greater good thing. Whether or not he does that successfully is up for debate, but his motives behind it are the things that will be good for everybody. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I think the other difference, too, is that, cause, I mean, they're both people who have these large networks. But I think the difference is, in Dumbledore's case, he's in the driver's seat, whereas Slughorn, I think, what is the word they use in Cambridge? He's, like, in the back, stretched out, kind of. Because Dumbledore, when he forms these networks, he's actually the active leader. Like, he's making the decisions, whereas Slughorn kind of wants to be more the advisor.
I don't think he likes to be the center of attention so much.
I was wondering, too, Richard, if you were so involved, because I didn't know that you were so involved in helping plan the story. Do you have any particular insights then? Or, like, what was that like? But until P.S. mentioned it, I hadn't known you were so involved in, I don't know, planning or betaing. So I was just curious if you had any insight watching it take shape.
Did you just talk out some of the ideas with him?
Well, I think it mostly, she had some interesting questions about how to do certain parts of certain scenes. I mean, it wasn't like, you should do this with this character, okay? Because, you know, I can't get my mindset around the male thing. I mean, I can't write that. I don't have those necessary skills. But
is a male, so he could give me. It was just insight into the male mind, really. Part of it was.
Yeah, mostly. And
what do men want?
I needed a man to tell me what men think.
Sorry, I just thought of that. Let's not go there. This is not a restricted podcast.
One of three things, actually.
I was just gonna say. I remember. I named this the random student Richard because he helped me.
That's right. What was his name?
Wait. Richard. His name was Richard.
Yes! I have been immortalized.
You have been. So anyway, what were you going to say, Mike?
Anyway, P.S., I got a question for you. What advice would, as a now published writer who is the leader of her own genre, what advice would you give all the would-be writers on our board?
I am the leader of my own genre.
That's you, P.S.
I don't know, but...
You are captain of the ship. Master of your fate. I'm quoting a famous poem, actually. But anyway.
A little bit, but yeah, she is. Yes.
So anyway, what advice would you give to all our would-be writers?
I don't know. Write good. Don't publish if it's not good. Because there's a lot
so
of crap
So your advice
out
is
there.
Don't publish if it's not good.
But you know, I...
Sucks, don't show okay, it to anybody.
Yeah, really get a beta.
But what happens if you think your story's really, really grand? Like, you know, that... Do you know what I mean?
Do we have anything else to say? Because I want to go off topic.
I really enjoyed it because yeah, I liked the way it was all tender. And I think it shows a really cool side of you know, slash fix. And because I don't think that there necessarily needs to be that division necessarily, but I think a lot of people get turned off, like Richard was saying, the first one he's read on purpose. People get turned off because too many people make slash about the porn. That's the same way it is in real life when too many people make homosexual issues about the sex. And I don't think it needs to be because there are real people that have real feelings and it's not all about the sex. Like, heterosexual people don't constantly go around talking and thinking and writing about the sex. So why does that happen for slash? I think it's good from that aspect. The PS has really sort of captured how these people are feeling.
PS, any last comments?
Okay.
Hey, everybody.
I liked writing it. It was fun. It was the first thing I ever wrote that was romantic.
Is there something you would like us to take away from it as readers?
I wanted people to see Horace as a young man who had problems and failings and issues and had been in love and that kind of thing, because I feel like I wanted people to see him as a person.
So do I.
No, she did an excellent job. She did.
So anyway, next week we're doing a fic called A Christmas Like No Other. It's by Melinda Leo, and there'll be a special guest on PLK.